We do have a quorum to conduct business. Present, Guttenberg, Edgman, Olson, Seaton, Wilson, and co-chair Johnson. And with that, we will take a brief recess till the chair gets here. We start.
Going to gavel back in, House Resource Committee, and it is 20 minutes after 6, 6:20 p.m. Today is Wednesday, March 17th. We do have Representative Wilson, Guttenberg, Seaton, Kawasaki, Edgman.
Edgman was here. He's gone.
And Tuck is coming, Johnson and Newman. We do have a quorum. Today we're going to go, before us we have House Bill 295 by rules by request of the governor, which is a university land transfer. We have Wendy Redmond from the university introduce 295, and Dick Mylius from DNR online as well. Wendy, please. We do have several amendments that we are looking at also. So after Wendy comes up here, Wendy, I believe we've got a CS on this one.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I'd like to move the CS for House Bill number 295, Community and Regional Affairs, 26GH2829/C. As a working document.
C is in Charlie for a working document. And is there any objection? Do we know the differences between the two?
I don't know that we've heard either one, so I don't know that.
We haven't heard either one. So, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarification, so the bill that we're just adopting, the bill that came to the committee as the document, we don't have a CS that we've prepared. So this is correct. This is the CS from the bill that came to committee. Thank you.
Correct.
So we probably didn't need to adopt
it. It's a committee substitute, regional affairs. So yes, we.
Do you want to?
We're already there.
Do these now?
Let's have the introduction to the bill here by the university, and then again, we've got two amendments here that we're going to have to, I think we'll hear, and maybe we can help some of the people online at the same time. Go ahead, Wendy Redmond from the University of Alaska, I guess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Wendy Redmond. I'm the Executive Vice President for the Statewide University of Alaska System. I'll try to be brief. I know many of you have heard this bill in other committees, so I don't want to go over too much old ground, but I would like to give just a couple of brief opening comments about the bill. In 1915 and 1929, the federal government granted approximately 360,000 acres of land to the University of Alaska. The acreage was intended, as land grant lands were, to generate revenue to support the university's educational mission. Only a portion of that land, about 112,000 acres, were actually ever conveyed to the university at the time of statehood, because as most of you know, so much of the land hadn't been surveyed at that point in time. So the Statehood Act of 1959 actually extinguished all land grants to the state of Alaska, including the university's land grant. And the 112,000 acres that we had at that point went under state management. There were all sorts of commitments in the history of this bill about the fact that the state would make good on the commitment of the land, because the state, of course, received such a large land settlement from the federal government. And at the time, it was believed that the state would be better served to not have any reservations for the university, for the schools, for mental health, that it would be better in terms of the state getting their total land grant if everything just came in toto rather than being divided up. I don't know whether that's true or not. There are people who will argue that it wasn't. As a result, the university's land went under state management, and our original land grants were eroded by municipal selections, land grant offerings, legislative designations. The university ended up having to go to court to get back the right to manage our own lands, which we did in the late 80s. Today we have approximately 160,000 acres of land. There are only two states in the nation that have received smaller land grants than the university, Hawaii and Delaware. So we've had, since that time, since 1959, there have been a total of six different land bills that have gone through. Five of them I've worked on. This will be now the sixth. One of those bills was vetoed. The particular bill that's in front of you now, the precursor to this bill, really began in 2000. It was called Senate Bill 7. And Senate Bill 7 passed the legislature, appropriating up to 260,000 acres of land. It was vetoed by the legislature, vetoed by the governor. It was came back to the legislature. That veto was overridden by the legislature. It went to the Supreme Court, fighting about the override. The Supreme Court said the override was, in fact, valid. The bill went into effect. In 2005, the legislature came back and said, well, we're really not that happy with just 260,000 acres of undesignated land. We'd really like to specify exactly which acres you will get. So we then passed another bill, House Bill 150, which was sort of the next iteration of that same bill, which actually then specified the specific acres. And as many of you know, some of you were here then, we went through quite a process with the legislature, as we are doing now, talking about those very specific lands. That bill, we then went from 2005 until about a year ago, the university and DNR proceeded with the process of conveying those lands. And, excuse me, in the meantime, another lawsuit was brought against the university and the state by SEAC and the Tongass Conservation Society, filed a lawsuit claiming that the bills were in violation of the Alaska Constitution, claiming an abridgment of the dedication of funds section of the Constitution. The Supreme Court in that case ruled in their favor, saying that what HB 130 had done was that what they should have done was to put the proceeds from the land into an endowment, that the proceeds needed to come back through the legislature for appropriation to the university. So what you have before you today in House Bill 295 is essentially the same bill as we passed in 2005, House Bill 130, with the addition of the language now, which gives back to the legislature the authority to appropriate the proceeds from the land back to the university. Of course, you don't have to appropriate it back to the university, but that's the idea.
Wendy, I think we're going to hear something from Ledge Legal about that appropriation process. So, well, go ahead. Or maybe it was a different issue. We've got a little bit of issue there.
Mr. Chairman, if you'd like to hear from Ledge Legal on that issue, I would ask that you also hear from the Attorney General on that issue, since we have a difference of opinion. So I guess we can get to that later. So I'd be glad to answer any questions. As the bill has gone through, our preference certainly is to leave the bill intact. We very much wanted to come back and deal with the bill that the legislature had already passed, that we had already argued out, and not have to go back through and re-deal with every acre of land that we had already been through. We've been through two subcommittees already, and each subcommittee has, in fact, begun taking lands out of the bill again. And I see that there are two new amendments here taking more lands out of the bill. So that's certainly your prerogative. I would ask that you give us an opportunity to you know, to talk this through. If the will of the legislature in 2010 is that the university simply shouldn't have any lands, that's an issue that I think is certainly a valid issue of discussion. And but to go back through and try to, in a 90-day session, second guess all of the lands that we've already been through and many times seems probably not the best use of any of our time at this point. So I'd be happy to answer any questions for you, and we'll certainly be available as we go through further testimony to answer questions as we move
on. You know, Wendy, I have a comment on the last point of the topic that you just made. And, you know, when I've talked to some people on this, I asked them, so did the university come to your communities to talk to you recently so that you knew exactly what was going on? Because a lot of these communities are creating development plans for their communities so that they know what their communities to look like. The state is encouraging communities around the state to create boroughs, but they need land mass to do that. Just how active and participating were you in going around to these communities so that they are aware of that? Because we are the voice of the public in the legislature, and we certainly heard from quite a few of those communities, and one people that I inquired from said that they weren't aware that the university recently came to them and talked to them about these lands. How much of an effort did you get out to go out around through Alaska or to notify these communities that these lands were going to be up for removal or for appropriation over to the university for the university to use as, I guess, their pleasure?
Representative Newman, I guess I would say this has been the law for the last 5 years. These lands were actually passed in a conveyance in 2005. The university doesn't actually have access to most of these lands at this point. We were in the process of conveyance. When the university does do land activities, of course, we're always in the communities talking to them about the process and looking at the land management plans of the communities. I would point out that every piece of land that was put up in the original bill, in House Bill 130 and in House Bill 295, are lands that from DNR that were already available for conveyance. So I'm a little confused about how anybody in any community could have an opinion that the lands were somehow off limits for conveyance to the university or to anybody else.
Maybe we could have worked with that confusion if we'd have worked with the communities closer. I mean, that's the point that I get. Questions from the committee? Time, Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for being here, Wendy. You know, there's been discussions about perhaps adding some covenant language into some of these communities. I'd like to hear your opinion on that. And I guess, I'll just go ahead, I guess.
Well, some of the acreage has covenants on it. I think in the last committee, some covenants were added in as the bill went along. That's usually not a good thing. It sort of depends on what they are. Certainly, the university is, by the law itself, required to provide the right of first refusal to any borough for purchase of the property. If the university is prepared to sell the property, they are given the right of first refusal on that. The whole purpose of the university as a land grant university is to actually get land into development. That's something that former Governor Murkowski, when he originally introduced this bill, I mean, that was the whole purpose of this bill, was to try to get Alaska lands into the hands of Alaskans. I think we've done a pretty good job of that. Other people may disagree, but I think if you talk to people around the state in terms of the kind of land developments we have done for communities, for residential properties, for commercial properties. They've been done and done very, very well. And I think I have a great deal of sympathy with people who have certain lands that they've been using for recreational purposes or their own personal property. I mean, this is sort of the classic, we don't mind if the university has lands, we just don't want them to have the lands that we've been using for our own purposes. DNR is in a situation where they're understaffed. They cannot manage the lands that they currently have in a way that is as efficient, probably, as the university does. So I understand why people don't want the university to have lands that other people have been using to cut their own timber or their own firewood. That's a problem. We don't allow that. So if it's university lands and we have the liability for that property, we manage it in a way that's different from the state.
Mr. Chairman.
Just
to continue then on that line, I guess there's several parcels that have just come to my attention. I hadn't had I haven't sat on a committee that's heard this bill before, so I don't know how many have been pulled out. I've got this new map here, but if we were to start adding covenants to some of these lands that are conveyed to the university, I mean, would you prefer that I'm just guessing that they might get stripped out here in this process. Would you prefer that we not put covenants on them and just strip them out, and then you pick other lands?
Yes.
Or? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. And then follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
Thanks. You mentioned the UA Lands Office and the lands, and I'm not 100% familiar with the operations there at statewide, but it was my understanding that it was sort of difficult to get lands, or, I mean, either like the over-the-counter sales or in other places, but you seem to think that you can do a better job than DNR. Is that just generally the thought then? Because this is it's a huge conveyance. I mean, it's several hundred thousand acres, and right now, it sounds like you're going to need more money to do that in the future. And is the university, I'm just asking if the university is really up to doing that then?
Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, I think I'd let DNR answer that. I mean, they have many more hundreds of thousands of acres than we do, so we've been, I think, very efficient at managing our lands and getting lands out to development very, very efficiently and very effectively. DNR just simply doesn't have, I mean, I'm not here to make a budget pitch for DNR, but I will while I'm here. I just don't think that they have the kind of staff that they need to be managing the kinds of lands that Alaska has. And I think they would probably agree with that. Now, we do not take general fund money to manage our lands. All management costs for lands are paid for from the proceeds from the lands. The current land grant, the trust fund from our lands, is $135 million. We have that, the University Land Grant Trust Fund is what is paying for the entire UA Scholars Program. That's what the funding is used for. We've been generating about $10 million a year in income off of those lands since we took over management in
88-89. Okay. I got a couple more. There's a lot of folks that are here in the audience, so I know there's some to testify tonight about specific lands. And, just for their, so that they understand, or just so that we understand how it'll work, If these lands are conveyed, the university would have control over those. I mean, how would their lives change? I mean, what would, suddenly they're not going to be allowed to do certain things? I think that's the concern with a lot of folks who visited our office. Mm-hmm. I don't know where these places are. I don't know what they look like. I see them in the maps, but I think that there's folks that are just concerned that suddenly their lifestyles are going to have to change mm-hmm. because of this conveyance.
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Representative Kawasaki, it's hard to tell you that because we don't have land plans for all of this land at this point in time, but certainly there are a lot of scare stories that I've heard in terms of, you know, what the university would intend to do from, you know, from clear cutting to building McDonald's to, you know. So I understand people's concerns, but in many cases they're just not realistic, and I can't tell you specifically what we would do with this acre or that acre. There are a lot of educational properties that are included in this bill as well. There are some gas lands that are included up in the interior of Alaska. I know there has been some initial discussions with Doyon about joint ventures for some gas development out in the Nenana Flats for some land that's on here.
Okay.
But I don't have specifics for each one of the parcels.
Sure. That's it for now. Thanks.
Thank you. And Wendy, you know, I know the legislators that are sitting around this table here tonight, and I know that they're very active, each and every one of them, in their communities. And I know that the claims, or at least the people that they talk to, they feel that their claims are very realistic. And probably not a very nice comment there, but, you know, I think the legislators know what's going on in their district, and I certainly give them credit for that. They get around in their communities, and they know what their communities say. And there is still quite a bit of land going to the university, even if there's a few parcels that are removed, that will still give you plenty of time and plenty of option and plenty of money to work with to continue on, you know, if we come back and if other lands are selected like that. I mean, you're still getting hundreds of thousands of acres, you know, I believe with one fell swipe here. So a few acres that are identified by, you know, members of this committee here because they are familiar with their communities, or we've heard from other communities and we've called and talked to them. I know I've talked to them. I think we still got, you're not in dire straits without money at the university. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Wendy, these bills have been around for quite some time. Can you tell us a little bit how they were selected to begin with?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, after in 2005, after the original bill, Senate Bill 7, had been passed in 2007, which were all for undesignated 260,000 acres, and it became clear that that was just going to be a really difficult, expensive, time-consuming process, that we would go back with DNR and that DNR would select lands that it had in its portfolio that were already designated as lands that were available for conveyance, and that they would select from those land lists a selection of lands for the university from around the state. And we entered into some discussion with them, but basically DNR had a list of lands that they felt were most appropriate, and so we agreed on those lands, and that's what we came forward with in House Bill 130.
Thank you.
So all these parcels, and I've been around this package before as well, and I realize that, you know, people come in and say, well, concerned about a selection and want it off of the list. And you've gone through this a few times before. Have these parcels and these arguments been made before on these parcels that were withdrawn and off of the bill out of the CNRA and what we're looking at doing now?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Guttenberg, yes, but some things have changed. As time has changed, if new boroughs have been formed or boroughs that are getting expanded and now can make other selections. So I think some of the changes that have been made in this bill to date are sort of reflecting changes that have happened along those lines since the original bill was passed, where, for instance, in Haines, I think the situation was that they were trying to form a larger borough, and the only lands that were available for them to get additional selections would have been the lands that were in the university bill, so they got dropped off in recognition that maybe that larger borough would select that. So in effect, things have changed since the original bill, and so that's getting, I think, reflected in some of the changes.
Thank you.
Go ahead. Are you done, David?
Yeah, for now. Thank you.
Any other questions for Wendy? Thank you, Wendy.
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And I too, have not heard this bill before, but as I look through some of the northern areas, I see a lot of pipeline right-of-way that's been selected. What's the advantage to the university for selecting lands around the Dalton Highway and the oil pipeline and the proposed gas pipeline?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think Dick Milius and Mary Montgomery, who is the university land grant person, is on the line, and they may be able to answer that better than I could.
Dick Milius, are you there?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I am here.
Dick, did you hear Representative Johnson's question?
Yes, I did, and I also had a bit of testimony I was going to add, but I'll answer the question first.
Dick,
the Dalton Highway parcels were
Dick,
yes?
Dick, name and affiliation for the record, please.
Sorry. My name is Dick Milius. I'm the director of the Department of Natural Resources, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. And actually, before I answer the question, I also wanted to thank the committee for meeting on a Wednesday evening, St. Patrick's Day, for the hearing, and apologize for not being there in person, but I had some personal commitments here in Anchorage. And also with me tonight is Marty Parsons, the Deputy Director of Division of Mining, Land, and Water, and Ann Nelson from the Department of Law. So I know there's some legal questions that you're going to have later. The answer to Representative Johnson through the chair is that the Dalton Highway parcels selected are parcels that are considered nodes for development. For example, one of them is at Coldfoot, which has always been envisioned as kind of possibly a future community-type development. The parcel at the Yukon River is where the pipeline and the road cross the Yukon River, an ideal parcel for some sort of development related to the road-river interaction, possibly even gas load-off type facilities and stuff. So they're considered the parcels that are kind of have good potential for some sort of development activities that may or may not be related to gas line. They could be the northernmost parcel has some potential for commercial recreational facilities. So they were specific nodes that were envisioned as areas where there would be development along the Dalton Highway in the future.
Representative Johnson, did that help you?
It certainly does, and I appreciate, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
This will not hinder any development. I know there's right-of-ways and easements. Are those are transferred as well as the property? There's no need to go get an easement from a new owner or anything like that still maintains, becomes the, it's still an easement for the state?
Representative Johnson through the chair, correct. Any existing rights-of-ways, including there are some right-of-way applications and right-of-ways issued for gas lines that go through these parcels, and these parcels are subject to any of those existing authorizations. And then, you know, if new authorizations were needed, you know, they would have to work with the university, but the university is looking at these parcels as, you know, economic development opportunities, so certainly those kind of additional rights-of-ways would be something the university would be willing to consider. Sure.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you. And can the state of Alaska condemn property owned by the university under eminent domain?
My attorney is waving her head yes, so I believe the answer to that is yes.
Could I get your attorney to put that on the record with her name and everything? I want that to be very clear.
This is Ann Nelson. I'm in the Natural Resources section of the Department of Law, and I don't have the code in front of me, but I believe the section is 1440-291 that states that university property can only be acquired through public domain, through eminent domain condemnation proceedings by the state.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, did you say only acquired?
I'm sorry, that No, I misspoke. I believe the statute, and again, I'm speaking without it right in front of me, but I believe the wording in the statute is that the state may acquire university property through eminent domain.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could continue.
Go ahead, Representative Johnson.
So if we have to do a new right-of-way, it's going to cost the state money to get our own land back?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, it's if we actually had to get new rights-of-ways that don't already exist, yes, that is a possibility.
And
but I might add to that, though, if it's a private right-of-way across state land, that, like the gas companies and stuff, have to pay the state for that as well. So it's current state, you know, unless the state itself is building the gas line, which I know is some of the proposals, if the state would charge, whether it's BP or ConocoPhillips or Alyeska, to pay the state for the use of the land.
Dick, I hope it's me, but I couldn't hear. I heard about every other word. And I hope I'm not the only one on the committee.
A lot of static on the line, so you hear me okay now, or?
Say something.
Okay, there's a lot of static on the line.
Yes, there is, and that's not helping.
I'm not sure what's causing that.
Dick, you're dropping in and out. I don't know what to do, but I think we need to find out about this before we go too much further.
Can you hear me okay now?
Not really.
I have another phone. Let me put you on hold for a second.
Okay. Hey, Dick, they tell us here you should call back in.
Okay, I'll do that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. We did have several amendments. Maybe we can just get into those first before we get into public testimony on this. Representative Wilson.
Present.
Before we present the amendment, I have another question. There is a corridor along the Dalton Highway where snow machine access is denied, a 5-mile corridor north of the Yukon River. What would be the university's position on making available turnouts and other areas that could be used to have access to the outside of that 5-mile corridor? Are you familiar with that at all?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I am not, but I will certainly get you information on that specific.
I'm sure Wendy and Dick Miley's are.
Mr. Chairman, I would certainly appreciate the university's cooperation, and if we had to carve out a 5-acre parcel out of this and keep it for our own, I might be willing to do that.
Okay. Dick Miley's, are you available?
Yes, we're back online here.
Okay, Representative Johnson, can you ask your question about corridor?
Thank you, Dick. And I'm talking about, as you may know, we're dealing with the Dalton Highway corridor access to motorized vehicles.
Yes.
What would be the, and maybe you're not the person to ask, but I ask about the university's willingness to have a nice little turnout built on some of their property they're taking along the Dalton Highway to allow access.
Representative Johnson, through the chair, we're still getting a lot of static. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, give it your best shot.
Yeah, man. Maybe.
Actually, I took you off speaker. Can you hear me all right now?
Please. Oh, much better. Thank you. Your lifelines are gone, though, Dick.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that would be up to the university to determine whether or not they want to pull out. These would be ideal locations, though, because one is right at the Yukon River. One is at Coldfoot, and the other one's at one of the, I think there's an airstrip and a kind of an old development node from pipeline construction.
So I think Representative Johnson, I don't know if you answered his question. I don't think so.
I think he said they're ideal locations. That's what I heard anyway. Were you breaking up when you said that, Dick?
No, that was... These would be good locations for some sort of pullouts and such, but although there's land within the subject to the existing state highway right-of-way, so if they were to go within the highway right-of-way, then that's already a state-owned easement through there.
Okay, do you know how, Mr. Chairman, do you know how wide that easement is?
Representative Johnson, I do not, but I could find out pretty quickly on that and get back to you on that.
That's okay. I asked DOT that question earlier today, and they had the same answer, so I'll let them get back to me. I just thought you might know. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, and it might be just a good place to put up a nice pad for a man camp, and when they leave, they can leave the pad there.
Great concept.
Well, let's take them in a row here. Tuck, Kawasaki, Seaton. These are for you, Dick Miles.
Yes, and just real quick, Mr. Chair, and Representative Johnson, I didn't catch anything that he was saying before he got offline, and I think it was a response to your question. I didn't catch any of that. Can we hear that one more time? I mean, I got the snow machine quarter, but didn't you ask a question just before that?
About why choosing the
yes,
Mr. Chairman, why they chose that, and the answer that I heard was because they're ideal sites for development, especially along the Yukon and the Coldfoot area. They're places for communities and offtakes and potential development areas for maybe natural gas up down the Yukon. So they are prime economic areas is why they chose them. And if I spoke wrong, Dick, just mutter through saying I didn't.
No, Representative Johnson, you have it correct.
Thank you.
Representative Kawasaki.
Thank you. Thanks, Dick. Question I asked earlier was regarding the university lands office and the way they do business versus the way you guys do business in DNR, specifically the Nanana oil, the oil and gas tracts right over there, just off, I think it's 12,000 acres in the Nanana gas area. If you're conveying this land over, university would have control over that land. You think that's a good idea, a bad idea? University changes. Changes presidents from time to time, and things change. I guess, I could see it happen where the university doesn't want to develop it and use it for something else versus the state's best interest. Can you comment on that?
First of all, the transfer is subject to the existing exploration license, so the university has to basically step into DNR's shoes and honor those existing commitments for the license that's been granted there. In terms of the whole intent for the university, it lands to generate revenue, so I can't imagine that they would not, pursue development of the oil and gas resources on this property if they're actually there. So.
Okay.
Representative Kawasaki.
And then, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the, I had another question on covenants on the lands that are being conveyed. How those covenants will, interact. In the future with the university? Whether it's a better thing to put a covenant on something or just strip it out. It sounds like the university would prefer to just not have the piece of land if it has some pretty strict covenants in place.
Representative Kawasaki, through the chair, I think the question of whether or not a covenant's preferred over not getting the land would be better addressed by the university, but there is the House CRA committee did sign a covenant on the Sumdum parcel to protect the archaeological and historical resources. That's the only parcel that currently has a covenant other than, for example, all the parcels are subject to RS-2477 and any valid existing rights, leases, rights of way, and so on.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Seaton.
A pass, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Are we through then? Representative Wilson.
I would like to move amendment number one, and then I'll speak to that amendment.
Object.
Okay. We have amendment number one, which is /C.2 Bullock, dated 3/16/10 by Representative Wilson. Objection, Representative Kawasaki for discussion.
Okay. And the reason I would like to add this parcel to the area of land that the university cannot have is because when Wrangell became a borough, and actually back in 2005, when the original bill was discussed, Wrangell and Petersburg at that time were both talking about becoming a borough. So into this bill was the parcels of land that the borough of Wrangell would want to keep for themselves. But at that time, we didn't know the boundaries of the borough because that was first being discussed. But since that time, Wrangell has become a borough. In 2008, they became a borough. And so there is a parcel of land called the Cleveland Peninsula Sunny Bay Parcel. And that is a big part of economic income to the state, and also an area where aches and a mental health area of our community, which is the biggest employer in Wrangell. And when we're talking about a town of about 1,800 people, if this parcel doesn't get included, and they have talked with the university, and the university can't guarantee what they're going to do with it, and they might have to move from that area unless Wrangell can have control as a borough for that land. And so I am asking for that parcel of land to be put back in here so that it is land that Wrangell can use for their borough.
So, Representative Wilson, when you say that you want this parcel put back in here, is this land that you would like to be available for the university to be able to take possession of, or to remove it from the list of property that will fall under possession of the university?
It is parcels of land that will, under the bill as it's written, would say Wrangell would have first priority to pick the land before the university if it became a borough. And that has happened. And so I just want to make sure that that Wrangell gets first pick, because the state of Alaska has made comments many times that they want to really encourage borough formation across the state. And that having happened in Wrangell, one of the things that the state has always said, that they can get 10% of the area of their land from the state to add to their borough. Because Wrangell is the borough, encompasses much of the Tongass National Forest, there's not very much state land to pick from. And so because of that, this is a very, very crucial part for the city and borough of Wrangell.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
And I do want to, I would like to read for you a part of the original bill that was passed in 2005, and it does say, notwithstanding A of this section, the state land identified and described may not be conveyed to the University of Alaska under this section if the land is included in a borough formed before July 1st, 2009. And that has indeed happened.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just for clarification, so the Cleveland Peninsula property, the upper one there, the Sunny Bay property, is being put on, being left in the bill, but it's just being moved on to the list as item number 4, so that if the city borough of Wrangell, page 9, line 21.
And again, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Fine. And so it's just being put on that list of parcels that are previously, that are available for selection if the city and borough of Wrangell has the ability to select acreage out of that. And if not, then if they don't select that, then it does revert to the University of Alaska under this bill. And I just wanted to make sure that I was understanding that correctly.
Well, I don't think it was in the original bill. Cleveland Peninsula wasn't, I don't think. Maybe it was, but all I know is that we wanted to make sure it was added to the part that Wrangell got to choose from. And if Wrangell doesn't choose it, which I'm sure they will, because it's a big part of the economy of the Wrangell, or the city and borough of Wrangell. So I'm sure they want this, and so that's why I'm putting it in, because it's what my constituents want, in my city.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
I just,
for the listening public, I just want to make sure that we are not removing the parcel. What we're doing is moving it into the selection list where Wrangell can select it if they have the ability to select that land. They could select it, and then it wouldn't be available. However, if they do not select the land or all of that land, the remaining portion that they don't select or the entire portion would be transferred to the University of Alaska under this bill. And I just wanted to make sure that I was clear on that.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think we are. Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Just a little bit of history. I'm not familiar with it, with this, your part of the country that well. So the history, so they, are they a new borough?
Yes.
Okay. And have they been selecting, if I may, Mr. Chair, selecting land up until this point?
Yes. They just have been doing it just this past month.
Okay. All right, and that's why they haven't selected it yet.
Right.
I just think, too, personally, that a lot of these local communities are really working on development plans for their communities, and what can we do for them to help assist in that? And whether they choose to select these later at a later date or not is yet to be decided, but the concept here is there's still going to be a tremendous amount of land. What's the total amount of land here currently, Wendy? In this bill?
Mr. Chairman, in this bill, 260,000 acres.
How much?
Actually, it was 260,000 acres. I'm not sure how much is there now with the
changes. Okay, but we're around at least 250,000 acres.
197,600 acres.
And dwindling.
Okay. Okay, 200,000 acres. That's a lot of property. So I think as members talk to the members of their community and stuff, I think it's just good to respect the public, and that's who we're here to represent, and that's just good policy that we do that, whether it's university working with them or through their legislatures. So I certainly support the amendment. Representative Kawasaki, did you have any comments on your objection?
No, I was just responding to the discussion. I can withdraw my objection, though.
Okay. Representative Kawasaki's objection has been withdrawn. Is there any further objections to amendment number one? Hearing and seeing no objections to amendment number one. Amendment number one, Peggy Wilson, /C.1, has been adopted. We have amendment number /C.3, and
Mr. Chair, I think that previous amendment was /C.2, C.2. Okay, correct. I thought you said one.
I'm sorry, Representative Tuck. I might have, /C.2, Seaton, which, just for clarification, on page 9, line 20, delete the word and. And on page 9, line 21, following place, insert and. And then the numeral four, parcel number KT.1002, Cleveland Peninsula, Sunny Bay parcel. Representative Seaton.
Thanks. Just for clarification, that was by Representative Wilson.
That was by Representative Wilson.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Thank you, Representative Wilson. And then I think we're going to, based on all the comments that we've got here in the emails and conversations that I've had with several of the folks in Tenneke Springs, their concerns. We've got letters. I think one was very compelling by Don Purgis, the mayor of Tanaki Springs, speaking on behalf of them. And I'm looking to see if Don is available. But I think I can speak to him. I know that the folks on the committee here have talked to quite a few of the folks in Tanaki Springs and read their emails and answered them back. And I think we pretty much have the gist on that one. Is there any objection to C3?
Someone needs to move.
I move amendment / C.3.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to object. For discussion.
Okay, we have an objection, Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were two parcels when this bill came before House Education Committee, and there was a fair amount of testimony about removing the 17-acre parcel that was surrounding the dock area, the barge landing dock, and that was later removed. The other portion was there's also been testimony from a number of communities, you know, that they need to grow and all, and they're worried about school closings and those things and economic development. And the question that we had, the testimony we had in there was that people just kind of wanted to leave it for walking, and they hiked there, or this or that, or the other thing. And so I haven't seen the particular piece, and I'm a little bit concerned that if this is the land that's developable to develop the community, I want to make sure that we have, you know, really strong, broad testimony. And it's not just some people that, as they testified in our committee, that they've moved there and they want to keep the land the way it was and without development. And so I'm a little worried that we are looking at maybe stifling economic development and in the area as well. So if we could find that testimony, or if there is some
we've got
testimony, I appreciate it.
How many hours worth do you want to listen to? I'll tell you what, let's have somebody from Tanaki Springs, Laura Hura, are you available in Tanaki Springs, city of Tanaki Springs?
Yes.
Larry Hura, are you available?
Yes, I'm here.
Larry, can you talk to Tanaki Springs and your issues?
Yes, I can. My name is Larry Hura. I'm on the city council of Tanaki Springs. And you should have a copy of our resolution from the city of Tanaki in support
committee.
Of excluding the Tanaki lands from House Bill 295. As you mentioned, as Representative Seaton mentioned, the parcels near the boat harbor were removed in Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and we appreciate that very much. This other parcel is parcel C34, I believe is a designation on it, and it's out near a logging road which is no longer used. The problem with these properties were subject to litigation in the early 80s, and there was a judgment handed down in this case that required these lands be kept for public use. And if these lands were turned over to the university, you know, we feel that this would not coincide with that judgment. And not only that fact, the fact is, well, Tanaki is a very small community. We're less than 100 people. We don't have a lot of private land now, and our income here at Tanaki is mostly state-supported as it is with the revenue sharing. But if we were to open this up, this would double the size of our private land in Tanaki and overwhelm the city. I mean, it's not that we don't want to see development out there, but we'd like to do it at a slow rate, you know, not all at once, which we feel may happen with the university. So thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'll be happy to answer any questions I can.
Also, we have Steve Lewis, who's on the City Council for Tanaki Springs. Steve, are you available? Steve, can you state your name and affiliation and speak louder, please?
I am.
Now we got you.
Can you hear me?
Now we got you.
Okay, I'm Steve Lewis, and I'm a Tanaki Springs resident and also a member of the City Council. And, okay, can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and Larry said a lot of what I had planned to say already, but we do thank the earlier committee for taking off the parcels near town, but C-34 of 261 acres, it's a couple of miles east of town core, and as we stated in the unanimously passed city resolution of February 11th, it's a heavily used area by Tanaki residents, not only for subsistence hunting and recreation, but also for commercial trapping. And Tanaki does have quite a bit of land of its own, so that it's not incumbent on the state and the university to provide lands for us to develop. And we've made a point of trying to develop our lands rationally and slowly, like Larry said. So we aren't opposed to development per se, but we don't want to have it thrust down our throats. So development of these lands could really impact our community. Like you said, it would almost double the land that's privatized, and would trying to provide the services to whoever, whatever developments occurred out there, and to supervise those would totally overwhelm our little community. So, you know, relative to the impact, the very small impact that removing this land would have on the university's income from the bill, we just think it's unfair to dramatically impact our community, so we'd urge you to support the amendment. I think it was C-3.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, it was. Representative Seaton?
Thank you. A question. Does Tanaki Springs have a school?
Tanaki Springs does have a school, yes.
And how many students are in the school there?
I believe right now we're standing at about 14 students.
Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the question has been in some of the, you know, there's been a lot of concern expressed by the superintendents and principals and teachers in many of these areas where they are close to the 10 and the school will have to close without development. And so it's been a balancing act when people are testifying that they don't want parcels developed or don't want, you know, additional development, which would in one way probably lead to having enough people to keep school open, and then talking to us in other committees that they're really worried about the school closing and want some kind of a waiver or a subsidy to keep a school open under these conditions. So I want to make sure that that the City Council considered the population of your school and what that can also mean without development of the lands around the area.
I think we took that into consideration in our hearts as we looked at that, and I don't believe that the lands considered are really going to have any impact on the school, especially in the time frame necessary to keep a school open. So I think that's sort of not a relative argument. If the school were to close, it's going to happen soon, and we need to get people moving into our town core rather than people out in the far reaches of town, and I think that's where development can easily occur. People can move into town. there's plenty of property there if we can come up with ways to make that work.
Now, on that point, Steve, I'm reading a letter from the mayor and the council, and it talks about these lands that we're talking about here, that they're specifically accepted from the, and it's on page 2 of the letter that we received from the mayor, top paragraph, transfer to the city where lands designated as tract C30 and C34 in the northern southeast area plan adopted October 15, 2002. In 2005, DNR took the position in House Bill 130 that Tract C-30 was not among the parcels in the 2005 list. The city is relying on the DNR's position that C-30 is similarly not included in House Bill 295. However, for some reason, it's considered in the litigation. The city objects into that. And this is the portion, I believe, that we're talking about here, and again, because it was not among the parcels on the 05 list. You've seen this coming, and you planned on having that transferred over into the city. Is that correct?
I'm afraid I'm having a hard time hearing and following your list there. You're suggesting that we did something to transfer land so that it would fall under that stipulation?
In the letter from the mayor, it talks about a memorandum of agreement. Of agreement from the state to try and transfer those lands over into the city. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Guttenberg, you got a question on this, or maybe you can help this
one? Thank you. Looking at the City of Tanaki's resolution, 2010-16, the third paragraph up talks about parcel ST. 1003 also includes parcel identified by looks like these 260 acres, more or less. Court order declares that the lands within this parcel are to be retained by the state. And then the next whereas says, as stipulated for settlement, Tanaki Springs versus State of Alaska stipulates that these lands be managed for commercial, industrial, right-of-way, and borrow pits.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to figure out what kind of land we're looking at here, because all we have is a map. I mean, it's not forested, because it would have said logged or not for residential. So I'm trying to get a picture of what we're looking at.
Okay, well, it does. It's got a road coming up from a landing facility that was used by the old logging process there. So we have a landing, and there is an existing old borrow pit along the road there, and the bulk of the rest of that land is forested except for the area that had been pushed around when the logging was going on at the shoreline.
Sam Gumber.
So if the city retained this for its own use, it seems like it would be inappropriate to use it as a buffer zone or anything but commercial or industrial or borrow pits. I mean, if somebody were to come along and say, I want to put a hatchery or a cannery or something industrial there, that couldn't be stopped.
Correct.
Okay. So
I think that is correct under the existing stipulation.
What would the city be looking to use it for?
At this point, I don't think the city has any thought of using it for the near-term future.
Okay, so in your northern southeast area plan, what designates this land for what? Is anything besides commercial, industrial, right-of-way, and borrow pits as stated in here?
I have to plead ignorance to that. I don't know what our northeast or the area plan says on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Guttenberg. Representative Tuck.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm just looking at, I don't have a copy of that letter of understanding or memo of understanding between the city and the state. But it looks like that there was a stipulation for the settlement. and to allow to have a free, simple title to all selected lands within the city's boundaries conveyed to the state by the Bureau of Land Management, except for the sites and acreages set up below. Two of those lands specifically excepted, E-X-C-E-P-T-E-D, from the transfer to the city were lands designated as tracts C-30 and C-34. In 2005, DNR took the position HB-130, that tract C-30, was not among the parcels in the 2005 list. The city is relying on DNR's position that C-30 is, similarly, not included now in House Bill 297. However, if for some reason C-30 is considered included, the city objects. So, looking at the map that we have,
C-30 is currently not included because it was taken out by the Regional Affairs Committee, I believe.
Okay. Can you share with me real quick, if you don't mind, through the chair, what parcels are, I'm sorry?
It's there's C-30 and C-34, and C-30 actually constituted two other parcels, but I don't think we need to go into that. So C-34 is the larger parcel of 261 acres, I believe it is, to the east, far east of town.
So, hold on. Wendy, do you have a copy of the maps of Southeast here that you could maybe help show where those at or on?
On what page?
We're on page.
Page, they're not numbered.
Okay.
But they're in alphabetical order.
Okay, the Representative Tuck, if you go into the Southeast section and go to Tanaki Springs, right after sundown, you'll have see a topographic map of the area.
Can I ask another question while I look this up real quick? Because I was looking at the resolution. The resolution talks about, I have some figures here. One of the whereases on the second page, second whereas, fiscal note number 3 of the House Bill 295 indicates after substantial additions to the LGTF endowment, UA can see modest operating revenue. For example, in approximately 20 years, UA anticipates annual investment earnings on new land sales to reach 1% of state general fund support, or $2.6 million. I understand that you're testifying that you have concerns about this area being developed and being developed too fast for the services that the city is able to provide. Is that one of the reasons why you have that whereas in there? Because then you go on to further to say, when you go down to the fourth whereas is on that page, parcel number ST-1003 is approximately 301 acres in size, which equates to 0.0013% of the total acreage of land to be conveyed to the university.
I think that we were more just trying to clarify that it's not a very the total impact of this entire bill to the university is a ways out there and relatively small, and taking away the 0.01% or 0.0013% of that is going to have a trivial effect on the university, whereas it has a major effect on Tanaki Springs.
Okay, and if I may,
Mr. Chair. That kind of frames it up, doesn't it?
Well, when I did the math and the 2.6 million, and then I multiplied it by the 0.0013, that comes out about $33,800 that is of concern of development for benefit to the university. How do you see this area being developed so fast? What is it that is going to create that? Because as Representative Guttenberg pointed out, these retained lands are to be managed for commercial, industrial, right-of-way, and borrow pits. So what do you see happening so quick that will trouble Tanaki Springs?
Well, I guess one thing is that we aren't sure. The university has declared that they think that those stipulations are invalid and that they could develop it in any way they choose. And while we think we have the legal ability to fight that, we aren't a rich community, it would take some effort to fight that. And if the university takes that position, then we have the potential for subdivisions and things that are really going to impact the city in terms of people wanting to have city services.
And you guys just finished a legal, excuse me, Mr. Chair, if you might, if I may. You guys just finished, the city just finished a lawsuit, and looks like it's been going back and forth, and then there was a statement of settlement. Where are we at now with that statement of settlement?
That's well before my entrance into city politics, so I don't, as far as I know, there's, the statement of settlement is several years ago, and I'd have to claim ignorance again. It was 81, I believe, the litigation was resolved, so that's nearly 30 years ago.
And Steve, I'll bet you never thought when you signed up for Tenneke City Council that you'd be testifying in front of the legislature.
Especially not with one ear on the telephone and only half being able to hear.
Okay, well, we'll try and speak up as much as we can. Representative Tutt?
Yes, and if you don't mind, explain to us just one more time the legal problems that this being included in the University Lands Grant, what the legal problem is again, potentially.
And Steve, I talked to Molly Kemp about 12:30 last night, this morning, and Molly said that she was on the Tenneke Springs City Council several years ago. If she's sitting there with you, maybe Molly Kemp could maybe answer some of the questions since it was prior your time on this.
Okay, that sounds helpful to me, and she is on the phone here.
Does that help me? Just trying to get the answers of maybe somebody who was there at the time.
Okay. Should I speak?
Go ahead, Molly.
This is Molly Kemp. I was president of Tenneke at the time, although I was not on the city council at the time of that. There was a very long-term controversy over a Forest Service logging operation up the Indian River Valley because the city controlled the tidelands in that area. And to try to cut the ancient history short, in 1977, there were negotiations between Tenneke Springs and the state of Alaska and Alaska Pulp Corporation, and they were eventually resolved by a memorandum of understanding that conveying land to the city through the state selection process. And then that process didn't occur over many years, and at that point the city did enter litigation against the state, which was finally resolved in 1981 with the stipulation of settlement. I hope I'm explaining this well enough. There were other examinations of that, but I believe that stipulation for settlement is still in effect, and it has this language about that specific area, saying that it would be retained and as public property and assigned those uses. The reasons that the commercial, industrial, road right away in Barrel Pitch was there was that there was an ongoing logging operation at that time that was utilizing the road, and this was to accommodate the continuing of that process until it was over. Does that help?
Molly, hold on a second. I think we have a Representative Seaton would like to make a comment.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just, my concern in objecting to this amendment was that there was a school that had low population. I wanted to make sure that there was full discussion that, not including this property in here might not develop it as fast. It may develop from DNR anyway, but might not develop it as fast. And I wanted to be fully aware that in the future, if that falls below 10 students in the school and the school closes, that the local folks weren't talking to us about problems that we've created. I mean, but we're getting, it sounds like full communities to support to remove this. It does have some covenants, basically, on it, restricting the uses that we've gotten here. So I'm going to remove my objection to the amendment.
Okay, Representative Seaton has removed his objection. Is there any further objection? Hearing and seeing none, I just heard a great sigh of relief from the city of Tenneke Springs. And Representative Seaton will probably get a whole lot more Christmas cards this year. So I think you're okay, Tenneke Springs, with that amendment /C.3 has been adopted by the committee.
Thank you.
And for clarity, what that does is on page 8, lines 26 and line 27, is delete the portion of United States Survey 2459 and United States Survey 6855 that are within. Thank you, Tenneke Springs. And I'm assuming since there we've got a few more people from Tenneke Springs, unless you want to say thank you. I don't know if we need to have more public comment tonight or not. I guess you'll let us know later. And Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. I know under the previous amendment.
Which amendment was that?
Amendment number one, that if the the borough doesn't take it, then it does go to the university. But with the amendment that we just passed, amendment number 2C.3, there was no stipulation on anything like that. So I would like to ask Ms. Redmond, when parcels are taken out, it just diminishes the total number of acres that the university gets. Is there any stipulation for additional designations that are available? Or do you have backups as we go through this to add anything or increase the size of some of the parcels you are already designated?
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, no, there isn't any. We haven't been making those accommodations as we've been going along to date.
Thank you.
Wendy, of the approximately, 189,000 acres that you've got, if you were to put those up for sale to help fund the university, I'm assuming that would take you a while, and if you were to sell those parcels, you would have a substantial amount of money to put into a fund to help fund the university. With the value of that, those properties, I'm assuming, would you not?
Mr. Chairman, I wish I could put my fingers on it right this moment, but many of the properties within this bill are educational properties that are already that the university has campuses on and so on, and so the conveyance is in this property. There's an additional 95,000 acres, which is part of the Nenana gas lands, so that's sort of the bulk of the lands. These other pieces are much smaller. So I'm not sure your question specifically was if we put them, we would not be putting them all up for sale. They're not all saleable.
Okay. Might be leasing some for gas leases. You're on a university on there.
Yes.
Further expansion on that. But nonetheless, do you feel you'd have a certain amount of funds available to you?
Yes, sir.
To help? I mean, obviously, millions. Or several decades and tens of millions. Thank you. With that, Representative Kosak.
I wanted to actually address that comment, and Wendy's not here to pitch for university funding right now. She's here to pass this bill. But just if we were to give the university these conveyances, doesn't necessarily translate into a budget item down the road. And I hope that the action that we take on this bill doesn't, in the future, have an impact over how we address the university budget. Just to point out that there's a lot of corporate lands that are out there, native corporate lands that are not being utilized to their maximum potential, and so just to say that there isn't that we're going to pass this bill and suddenly the university will become suddenly solve it, I think is not accurate. So I just wanted to make sure that folks knew that.
Yep, and I've got a comment to that here shortly. Any other questions of Wendy at this time? Representative Wilson?
I would like to submit Amendment Number 3.
Amendment Number 3 by Representative Wilson. Okay. And since we don't have written, I think it's a conceptual amendment.
It's a conceptual amendment. It's on page 9, line 1, and it changes the date July 1, 2012 to July 1, 2017. And that just gives Petersburg an extended time to allow them to become a borough.
Is there any objection? Yeah. To
Mr. Chair, can I get that the page number and everything one more time? I'm sorry.
Representative Wilson made a conceptual amendment on page 9, line 1, after July 1 to change the date 2012 to 2017 to allow a little more time for the community to get their act together.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I highly doubt that that will happen, but they're in the process of dealing with it, and I would like to give them some extra time in case that happens.
Okay, is there any objection to conceptual amendment number 3, Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg, would you like to speak to your objection?
Thank you. I have a young borough in my district, the Denali Borough, and they too are in the middle of selecting land, and I'm sure I don't know. I mean, I don't mind giving them more time to decide whether they want to be a borough or not. I'm just wondering how it affects other entities in the state that are considering this, or why the state is in the bill to begin with, and what its meaning is, and if there's a stipulation coming before for this date giving them this much time, and what the impact of extending it would be for any other entity in a similar situation.
Just at first blush, the way I read that, Representative Guttenberg, is because they specifically are talking about that includes Petersburg if a borough is not formed, and they talk about that the specific area of the state. Is that correct, Representative Wilson?
Yes.
I guess maybe I spoke on your behalf.
If I may, Mr. Chair, maybe Dick Miles has some background on this, if there is any, or Ms. Redman, I don't know. Somebody wrote the bill, and there's a reason to put it in.
Representative Wilson? I can actually speak to that. When the bill was written, Petersburg and Wrangell were talking about becoming boroughs, and so they put that language in there. Wrangell became a borough. They got their information together, and Petersburg is still working on it. They're having trouble, and I just thought it'd be nice to give them some extra time.
If I may, so with this bill or the previous alliteration or the previous one before that?
It was in the 2000.
Representative Wilson?
I'm sorry.
Just because our clerk asked me earlier, I asked her how we can help best serve their needs there.
You said jar?
And that helps their needs of getting home earlier, right. But not scripting.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now I've lost my train of thought.
Move your microphone.
So during that time, Wrangell, and this was in the 2005 original bill.
Mm-hmm.
Now this bill is before us again, and Wrangell has become a borough, so we've taken care of Wrangell. But what I'd like to do is give Petersburg some more time, and it wouldn't change this. Nothing will change at all, except it's just extending them some more time. And right now, it looks like it's going to take them before further than 2012. And I'm just giving them some time.
Okay. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'd like to propose a friendly amendment, and that would be to change from 2017 to 2014. And Mr. Chairman, the reason for that is that, you know, we are wanting to stimulate some action, and if we put it out to 2017, we're almost saying to them, well, don't worry about it, you've got, you know, forever. And so I can understand extension a little bit, but I think that 2 years is, would that be considered a friendly amendment?
Yes, I would accept that.
Okay, so that would be an amendment to the amendment to change the date from 2017 to 2014, and I'll, I'd just like to speak to that briefly. You know, I think with the decrease in revenue sharing and opportunities for these communities to actually get out there and work and decrease revenues into these communities, it's very difficult for them to try and, you know, deal with the legal issues that they have to deal with, and get out there with public notice and meetings and things that they do. And I don't think a five-year process on this, you know, an extension on that, I think that that's a better option for myself. You know, so I would like to particularly, I mean, I think the 2017 is a better date, again, because of a lot of the issues that these communities are currently trying to deal with and just trying to stay above. And then you've got these small communities like this, too, where they have a high turnover rate in the amount of people that are working in the city offices and things like that because they don't pay right. They don't, there are a lot of volunteer work that goes on there, and a lot of times those balls get dropped on that. So I think that 5 years is probably pressing the issue of when they can actually get all their work done. That's a tremendous amount of work, to, I mean, when you're forming a borough and all the things that they're doing, and to allow them to make sure that they do have the adequate time, I think that 5 years, an extension on that is appropriate. Representative Kawasaki.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I was sort of thinking the same way, but actually now that I think about it, maybe it even hastens the formation of a borough, and I think that that's where the sponsor and the sponsor of the amendment is going. Just to, I had a question about how those lengthened timelines would, I guess, hinder the university's ability to acquire other lands. If we, if that would be the case, or if the, I guess the Department of Natural Resources and University of Alaska could just figure out other lands in the meantime, or if they just suddenly this is just off the table until 2014.
Wendy, can you address that about what contingency plans that the university had for? Obviously, you had to assume that the legislature would hear from constituents and there'd be objections to these amount of lands. You know, and originally, too, this was, I believe, going back on memory here, that this was a match from Senator Murkowski was going to be able to get some federal land. I think it was a 200, a total, the state coming up with 250 million acres that she was trying to get another match from the federal government for 250 million acres of federal land that I believe that was originally in House Bill 130. And that's when these lands were originally brought up to us and selected in that. And that was the reason of the selection process in a lot of it. You know, obviously, they work as a lands grant university, but I believe that that was a large intent of House Bill 130 was, again, to get some more, another match of 250 million acres from the federal government at the same time. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, they weren't necessarily contiguous. The original land grant bill in 2000 was prior to that match. Then when we, by the time we came back, then this federal idea had also picked up some steam. So at that point, then they kind of came together. So that is correct. So there have been several streams that have all come together. And relative to contingency plans, I'd have to defer to Dick Milius on that question. I actually didn't expect quite so much. Controversy on this bill, since I thought we had gone through most of the controversy. Naive of me, I guess. I thought we had actually worked through much of the controversy, and many of these issues in the 5 years since the bill had passed, we'd been actually working with several of these communities, as several of you know. So we'd already sort of anticipated land trades and different development activities that were going to be going on in these communities with these lands already. So some of this, naive as I am, sort of took me a little bit by surprise. But you know, anytime you convey land in Alaska, we take our land very seriously here, as you pointed out, Representative Newman. So
how much land does the university currently own?
Currently we have 100 and 160,000 acres.
How much of that is available for sale that's not under lease right now?
Mr. Chairman, if I may ask Mary Montgomery, can you answer that question?
Mary Montgomery, are you there? Mary Montgomery.
Hi, this is Mary Montgomery. I'm the director of the University of Alaska Land Management Office. I don't have the exact acreages for sale. We have about 500 parcels usually up for sale or in an offering at any given time. Probably 10 or 15,000 acres. It's just that balance of not flooding the market and easing the lots out. And in any community, we don't want to put 50 or 100 lots for sale in a community. So we really try to watch how we move parcels out.
Okay.
Does that answer the question?
Well, I guess I'm just trying to get to the point that I think that the university, when they're using this, that with the lands that they're selling, they can take that money and buy lands that are more valuable for resale. They can do a lot of different options with this money that they do, to upgrade, I guess, their monies that they've got. They can trade them out for other, they got a lot of opportunities in that. So I'm just trying to get at the amount of property you actually sell per year and how much you actually already own. Dick? Mylis? Are you still there, Dick? Dick? Mylis? Hello, Dick Mylis. Representative Newman calling Dick Mylis. Dick, are you still there?
Mr. Chairman?
Okay, there's Dick.
We actually switched phones, but the telephone operator didn't switch the other phone. But,
say, Dick, let's see. Dick, what contingency plans can the university have if there's lands that are taken out now? What ability do you have to assist the university in selecting other lands?
Mr. Chairman, again for the record, Dick Mylis, Director of DNR, Division of Mining, Land, and Water. There are no contingency plans because that would require legislation to allow the university to select other lands. So the idea with this bill was that this was a set list of lands and we didn't have backup lands if things got taken out. I do have one note, and that is if you do change that date in line one, the subsequent dates in that section also need to be changed accordingly.
Yeah, that's why we had conceptual, and so that'll get cleaned up in the drafting. So Dick, is it difficult for you to assist the university in selecting other state lands of the hundreds of millions of acres that the state owns to try and get to the university?
Mr. Chairman, like I said, we would need to have specific legislative authority to transfer additional lands, but the challenge we have is that in this whole process, we were looking for lands that have development potential, and even though the state owns a lot of land, the amount of the acres that we have that are fit that criteria is fairly limited, and we didn't want, for example, producing oil and gas properties to be on the list. We've tried to minimize the impact on the state's timber program, minimize the impact on some of the prime recreational parcels. So any parcels of land that meet the criteria for giving to the university are probably going to be equally or perhaps even more controversial than what you have. So it's not an easy process to come up with 200,000 acres of lands that have development potential that aren't in somebody's backyard that you're going to hear similar comments on. So if we came forward with additional lands, you'd hear a lot of the same issues just from different communities.
Okay, going for the best. But I think what we need to do is get back to the amendment here right now. And that was to Representative Wilson originally had proposed changing those dates to 2017 and corresponding changes that have to be done to make that happen. And then Representative Seaton wanted to make an amendment to amend that to 2014. Representative Seaton, do you still maintain that amendment to amendment number 3, Wilson?
Yes, I'll. And Representative Wilson, you object?
Yeah.
Okay.
Representative Wilson objected to the amendment. To the amendment, we are going to vote now on the amendment. Any further discussion? Vote on the amendment to the amendment. to change 2014 to 2017 in number 3, Wilson. Clerk, call the roll. And again,
it's 2012.
Oh, excuse me, 2012. And again, a yes vote would be to change that to 2014. A no vote would still maintain Representative Wilson's amendment at 2017, which we will take up for a vote next if there is an objection to that. Go ahead.
Representative Seaton?
Yes.
Representative Edgman? Representative Guttenberg?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
Yes.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative P. Wilson?
No.
Representative Olson? Co-Chair Newman?
No.
Co-Chair Johnson?
No.
4 yeas, 3 nays.
So, Amendment Seaton has passed. So, that was the amendment to the amendment, conceptual amendment number 3, Wilson, which I believe now says, Representative Wilson, that those dates would be 2014. Is there an objection to that amended amendment?
I object to the original amendment. I will withdraw my objection.
Okay. Objections, all objections have been withdrawn. Any further objections? And that would be again to change the date to 2014 on page line 1 and any corresponding language that has to conform to the conceptual amendment. Hearing and seeing none, amendment number 3, Wilson, has passed. I'm going to take a shot in the dark for my community. That we had the Frying Pan Lake area also, so I'm going to call this conceptual amendment number 4. And if you look on the southeast area where it says Frying Pan Lake, and the reason that I'd like to just
southeast or south central?
South central, I mean, excuse me, south central, and it's about the second or third page in. It says Frying Pan Lake. And if you look to the east of that is Nancy Lake, and Nancy Lake State Recreation Area that surrounds a large part of that, which is all not available for development. And again, because it's a state park and a state recreational area in there. And again, trying to help the community of Willow expand their boundaries and their opportunities that they have within there. And this is one of the fastest area growing areas of the state. And the desire for these folks to try and create development within their own lands has a huge potential to help these folks. And again, so that's my reason for offering this. And certainly don't want to take anything away from the university, but just trying to make sure that we're acting to the needs of the people and the desires of the people. And again, they are currently working on their development plans. There have been ongoing discussions there to the point where we're actually having several hundred people come to the community council meeting. It's a very active community in doing that. And a lot of participation in the communities, which is a good thing, a very good thing. And so I'd like to be able to help the community of Willow doing that. They've got a lot of areas in their community within their city limits. Actually, they're already closed off because of state parks and such. And so I'd like to take Frying Pan Lake off of the parcels to be transferred to the university. And that's the conceptual amendment.
Object.
We had objection, Kawasaki. Speak to your conception. Do you want to speak to your objection, Representative Kawasaki?
Sure. This area, I guess, you know, we've been going through this process now for a little while. The land that is surrounding Frying Pan Lake is currently one of those that the Department of Natural Resources identified as land that's state land that's conveyable and could be used for all sorts of sources. They've decided to put it into this bill so that the university could benefit from it. I asked earlier whether it was thought that the land disposal office in the university or in Department of Natural Resource would be a better, more appropriate place for it. Sounds like the university would intend to use several of these parcels for development opportunities, and they're not willing to just lock those areas up. I think that we could give them give it a shot and see whether the university is able to put these out so that private owners can get it maybe faster than they would be under DNR. And so I would hesitate to start pull a lot of these parcels out if we're serious about making sure this bill passes.
And I would like to point out, too, that the Willow community already has the Deception Creek area on the page to the left of that, so it's not like they're not willing to already give up some of the lands that, are within some of their boundaries, too. And so it's kind of a give-and-take situation to where, it's a give-and-take situation with everything that we have to deal with, and all they are willing, and that's some pretty prime land up there by Deception Creek, pretty good views of the mountains and stuff, and so I think that's more than adequate reason for me. They're not saying don't do it here, but instead of taking two, let's take one and leave one. So it's a give and a take situation with that community. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dick, are you still on the line?
Dick Milius, are you there?
Yes, I am online.
Representative Johnson.
Dick, what would you do with the land if you kept it?
Representative Johnson, I believe this area is an area that we would look at for possible land sales. There are a number of dog mushing trails that go through this that we had, worked extensively with the community to identify and reserve, because we've actually already prepared the deeds for the university on this parcel, as we have with a lot of others. But so any sort of land sale would have to protect the recreational trails that go through this area.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Johnson.
Would have to?
Representative Johnson, the chair, actually with the conveyance of the university, they would have to protect them because the draft deeds for the university actually reserved out made it subject to, I don't know if it was a reservation or subject to, but it was subject to those certain trails that we had worked with the community to protect. If DNR had it, we would, since we've already identified those as important trails, we'd likely reserve those out in a land sale as well.
And again, that's part of the reason here is because we got dog mushing trails there, and we're having such a conflict in this area of the state with motorized and non-motorized, and it's really starting to come to a head. And to allow some of the dog trails to be out there too, to let them have their piece, so that the motorized areas can have their piece too, and in an area where there's the fastest growing area of the state, hundreds of thousands of people are coming in through there. We've got the restart, the real start of the Iditarod starts right there in Willow. This is a huge mushing community, and it's out of respect for those people too. And that I'm trying to ask for that. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not sure if we've heard anything. We heard this bill in Education Committee, and we didn't have one person from that area call in or testify or write requesting that these not be done. It sounds like that DNR has been working with the community and has prepared the deeds, and we haven't had any objections. I don't think CNRA, at least there's nothing in our packet that shows that CNRA got any objections from the community itself. And so I'm reluctant at this point. It'll be going up to finance or something if there's other, but we've got areas that we had resolutions from city councils and those kinds of things, but these are developable lands if they've prepared the deeds with the trails considered, so that the trails can't be you know, have to be maintained. It seems like these are some of the kind of areas that they've been working with the communities on doing this, so the community wouldn't be unaware of it. So I'm just surprised we haven't had any correspondence.
Representative Seaton, there was lots of correspondence here a couple of years ago. I don't know if Vern Halter was knocking on your door. I know I met him, led him around the community here, the building here. Vern, being a former Iditarod musher for quite a few years, and D.D. John rose up in that area, and some of those mushers, and it's just out of respect for their goals and what they want to see in their community. And I just want to try and respect the desires and wishes of our community. And that's why I offer this. And again, they're creating their development plans. They're working towards those plans. And I'd like to try and make sure that we're responsive to those people. You know, we also make sure that we get the university about $1 billion. And then, you know, it brings up another issue with the university, too, is when the new trunk road extension went through from the Palmer Experimental Farm in through there. The university made DOT pay a tremendous amount of money for that property that they went into there, a tremendous amount of property. And again, it seems like it goes from one pocket or another, but the university sold that land to the state, but yet didn't put any of that money back in towards that experimental farm or any of those other areas, you know, that's right down in there off between Wasilla and Palmer, and when that road was going in through there too. So we're just trying to help responsive. So the university does sell other lands that we haven't seen in here. I haven't seen the fiscal notes on those there, but I tried to get the numbers out of them in there, and I know it was, I think, somewhere in the tens of millions of dollars in north that they got out of that, that we didn't see any of that money returned back into the community on that. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In this area, are you interested in seeing this area be developed or to hold off from being developed?
Representative Tuck, I'd like to see this land being used as the community sees it to fit. You know, I like local control. I like people at the local level to decide what goes on in their communities and not the state telling them what they have to do in their communities.
And this particular issue, Mr. Chair, are you do you believe that by the state keeping ownership on it, that there'd be more local control versus the university having control of it?
I think if they had the opportunity to have this conveyance into their community, they would love to have that so that they can sell that and try and help support their community. Again, an unincorporated area of the state, they don't get the revenue sharing currently that a lot of communities get. And it's their desire to grow their communities, but they just don't have the ability to do that right now. They don't have the land to sell and to be able to do that. And again, how are we going to start weaning these communities from the state's coffers and general fund revenues when, you know, revenue sharing and programs like that that they don't currently get unless we allow them those opportunities? You know, if they had the opportunity to have this land conveyed into their city limits so that they could sell that and help provide for the funds so they can grow their communities, so that they don't have to rely on the state for a lot of things that they currently do. You know, revenue sharing programs that they just currently don't get any of that now. That's my goal.
And Mr. Chair, I can't see the relationship in the map from how far this is from the borders of Willow, but can you share that with us? Let us know where Willow's boundaries, borough boundaries would lie.
Yeah, if you look right just west of that, probably Nancy Lake at White Crossing, we're probably 4 miles south of Willow, the town center. And where you see Willow Lake there on the top left-hand side of the map, that's right in the middle of town.
Okay, so so it stretches down 4 miles. I take it that these are probably 1 mile block squares on this map. I can't tell.
Yep. Yes.
Okay, yeah, 1 mile. There we go. So So it almost comes up close to the borough limits.
Yeah, and that land is pretty much, I don't know if you're familiar with when you cross over the overpass there, that White's Crossing, it's off to the east of that, or off to the left as you're driving north.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gutberg.
Thank you. So this parcel, Frying Pan Lake, is not inside the Willow's limits?
It's within the Willow city limits, yes.
Oh, it is inside the city. And are they not available for land selection?
I don't know if they are.
Okay. So, I mean, do they have property tax? I mean, where I'm getting at is that if you're looking to build the tax base, the university is generally considered an aggressive developer. You know, the university is going to pay to have development. You're going to have property tax if Willow has property tax, and you're going to be building up your community by outside of a private developer, by the university, probably at some reasonable amount of time as compared with the state. You know, going through the process of nomination and selection and doing all those things, which most of us consider fairly cumbersome. So I'm not sure, you know, if you don't want it selected because you don't want it developed, that's one thing. But if you're looking to have it developed, it would seem like the university is going to take care of those things. They have to maintain the mushing right-of-ways, all those existing right-of-ways through there as it is. And seems like you'd be doing people a favor by doing that. But
You make a good point, Representative Guttenberg, except that they're not a community yet, you know, an organized community, and that's their goals in their community development plan is to become an organized area of the state, you know, their long-range goals of what they've been trying to accomplish. And so if they were to be able to have conveyance of this land, the community could sell those properties for development and set those boundaries and covenants as they see fit. And I don't think that there's any secret to anybody here, if you've got dog mushing trails in through there, just how that goes over when you try and sell that property and the conflicts that are going to start arising, then it's not a nice situation to have. And it gets to be very, very controversial. So, again, leaving it into the community's hands that develop their properties as they see fit, I think, is a good way. Hopefully, they'll be able to sell that and be able to support their government.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm misunderstanding. So, Willow is not actually a municipality?
It's an unincorporated area of the state.
So, there aren't any city. This is 4 miles away, basically 4 miles away from Willow, but there isn't a city limits at this time. Is that what I'm understanding?
I guess maybe I misspoke that. There's a city limits, but they're not an incorporated area. They're not like a Class B city or, you know, like that. Houston's the only area that is classified as a city, a Class B city.
Mr. Chair, so under this, so this is an area that is organized by definition or unorganized?
It's. I would get probably. I'm guessing my best here. Unorganized. I'm not that familiar with how city governments organize, but I know that there's one organized city within the community within my district, and that's Houston. And I believe what they call a Class B community, Class B city.
Mr. Chair, how about if we implement language that is similar to what we did with the city of Wrangell and with the city of Petersburg, giving them an opportunity to organize and then have the ability to be able to acquire those lands and acquire this land with a date sometime in the future, replicating what we've done for other communities?
I guess that'd be okay, but how they go about doing that and what their plans are in their times, I'm just not familiar with that. I know that that's their goals into the future, and I, Representative Tuck, I appreciate that, but I just don't know what their times are. I just know that they'd like their desire from the members of that community, and certainly I spend a lot of time in my community and talk to the members of my community. It must be spring, we've got mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Got mosquitoes already.
I don't see anything.
So, and with that, again, just trying to, you know, what do we do? That's our job, is to work with our communities and try and support our communities, and that's what I'm trying to do here.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I do have some hesitation, only because we haven't had any written testimony. We haven't had any testimony. I know you know some of the concerns of the area, but you also expressed that you'd like to have them have the local control. I think one of the best ways of doing that is to have an opportunity for them to become organized, become independent, and to be able to acquire that land so that they then have full authority to be able to do as they see fit for it. I do see this as a potential solution, being able to have them the opportunity to do that. That way, their needs are met according to their desires.
Maybe we could do that if we did it in, like, on page 9, underline, right after line 11, where it says under number 5, maybe make a 6 there. But I would like to be able to allow them a little bit of flexibility, to add a couple of years to that, to at least 2016 on that. I don't know. I think it'd just be easier to take it out and try and get it to them.
I think you're giving Petersburg the opportunity.
Yeah. I'm not quite sure what we got going here. I was just trying to keep it easy, Representative Tuck. I appreciate your efforts.
No, at the same time, Mr. Chair, I understand what you're trying to do. It's just the tough part. I want to see this area be protected for your district's interests, but with not hearing any testimony and not having any further information on this, I want to see it protected for the community's interest, and I'm all for giving more time. And I also want to see boroughs get developed so they can sustain themselves and be able to develop their own areas. So I would like to offer a friendly amendment, if I may, to a conceptual one, and just to offer it there probably on page 9, right after line 11.
Or just the conceptual.
Just the conceptual. Yeah.
He said an amendment.
Petersburg does not want this.
Amendment to the amendment. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Representative Wilson. That way, I think it's a good compromise to be able to meet your needs and also have opportunities there after the community gets a chance to weigh in and to hopefully develop.
So can I work on that one and basically say that conceptual amendment number 4 would be to allow the community of Willow to request conveyance of the Frying Pan Lake area. If they don't do that within 10 years, that they can go back on to movement towards the university.
Yes, I would. That conceptually how I would like to see it. I know just recently we passed an amendment to increase the time frame for Petersburg 2017, but we also understand that Petersburg has been further along in their process of trying to be organized, probably much further than Willow has. A committee supports that, I will support that as well.
Well, I would accept that as a compromise.
So I'll go ahead and move the amendment to the amendment, conceptual amendment.
Is there an objection to amendment to amendment?
Object.
Object, Kawasaki. I think we've heard it. Do you want to speak to that? Or
sure.
You know the issue by now?
We've already heard testimony from Dick Miley, that there's no other contingency plans related to adding more land into the UA lands bill. If we do this amendment, it'll essentially lock this piece of land out from the university being able to utilize it. I think if this bill passes along its way, passes the Senate, then suddenly you've got some lands and titles that are going to be disputed for, like the ones that are in Petersburg area, likely to be added into Petersburg. But this one will at least not have clear title for 10 years for the university in which to do something on. I think it's just either you give it to them or you don't, and that's like how I'd prefer to see it.
Jim Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And, you know, if we look back at the other constructions, they were for Wrangell. It was passed that in 2005 and went through 2012, I guess. I kind of agree that 10 years is a long time if the community wants to develop. I mean, because we're basically putting a hold on it. Neither DNR nor the university will be able to do anything with this land. And obviously, they've been working with the community if they've already gotten deeds drawn up and working with the community to identify the trails. So this is probably one of those parcels that is in a much more readily developable stage and has been proceeding. And so I think to put a 10-year limbo on that would be a long time. So it just seems like we're tying it up much more than even pulling it from the list. And I just still have a problem because, like I say, in education, CRA, and here, we haven't gotten anything from any community member that objected to it. I think the objections in the previous bill were that there were dog mushing trails and all that weren't. There was fear about that access being cut off, and that's been handled within the titles transfer. So.
Again, I was part of that discussion, Representative Seaton. I remember it very, very clearly, and it was a lot of gnashing of the teeth and butting of the heads to get that far. But again, for a community to start the proceedings and to start moving through that, I don't think 10 years is that. Again, they are. It's a give and take. They already have put parcels up there and said, okay, we'll allow that. We'll live with that. And again, just asking for a little bit of flexibility on there. And again, they already are sitting on 190,000 acres to deal with that. There will either lease or disposal. I think that's probably 10 years, and we've heard testimony from Wendy that said that they already have a certain amount of area that they dispose of in certain areas, and just north of that on Deception Creek, right, it's Hatcher's Pass Road, Willow Side, where 5 miles up the river, 4 miles, actually Deception Creek's at 4 miles up. We're already looking at almost a section there that's available for disposal. So if their intent is to only get rid of a certain amount of land in an area, they've already got almost a section there available for disposal. So I don't think that 10-year delay to allow them to do that is too objective. Is that correct, Wendy? Can they work with that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm the wrong person to ask for that. You have to ask our land manager. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a political question.
That's fair.
Though.
You can always say, I don't know. That's the best way sometimes. So, again, I'm just trying to help our community, and I think that it's been a give and a take situation to this discussion. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dick, are you still on the line?
Representative, this is Marty Parsons, Deputy Director of the Division. Mr. Miley has had to leave for another engagement, so he has asked me to sit in for him.
Mr. Chair, what's the status of land that's conveyed with a time frame on it? Who owns it?
Representative, through the chair, this technically until title passes from the state, the state still owns that land. It doesn't belong to anyone else until we've actually QCD'd it to another party, either a municipality or another subdivision of the state.
Would this be almost like a lien, where nothing could be done with the property until it's been transferred? Is that appropriate?
Representative through the chair, from what I understand of the conversation, if the land is set aside where no action, no development can be taken for a 10-year period while the community of Willow determines whether it's going to incorporate, then no development could take place either through the university nor could the state have any type of subdivision or land sales in that area.
Follow up, Mr. Would you still be able to maintain or at least monitor the dog sled tracks, trails, and stuff?
Representative through the chair, the state would still have ownership, so we would have to manage the land, or we would manage the land just like any other state parcel. There would just be no, from the conversation that I've listened to, there would just be no conveyance available to any other entity or to any individuals within the state until the 10-year period had run.
Would you make any improvements on it in the next 10 years or anything like that?
Through the chair, would be highly unlikely if there were any, if this land is set aside and it sits really in a state of limbo, that we would maintain the status quo, but I can't imagine any development or any expenditures of state funds on lands that we're not sure what the future ownership pattern is going to be.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Would it be possible then for the community of Willow, if they wanted to form a city, to request conveyance of this property to them?
Mr. Chairman, the situation as it sits now is the land surrounding that has all been transferred to the borough. So there would be nothing that could be done as far as conveying it to a new municipality until it had incorporated and it's any land entitlement determined and what lands would be available. So there's quite a process that would have to take place after the community is incorporated. I believe we have 2.5 years to complete that process.
Thank you. That's kind of what I was thinking too. That's why I would like the 10-year extension I was trying to look at. Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And for clarification, did you say the lands around this were selected by the Mat-Su Borough, but these lands, this parcel was not selected by the Mat-Su Borough for borough entitlement?
Representative Seaton, through the chair, that is correct. The Mat-Su Borough has received its entire entitlement of 355,000 acres, and so there is no more entitlement that goes to the borough, and these lands are retained by the state for state management, and that was one of the reasons it was selected for inclusion in the university bill.
Must be some reason there.
Representative Tuck. Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And can you, I forgot who the person on the phone is. I'm sorry, it's Representative Tuck, but can you tell me that, is Willow part of that 355,000 acres that was given to the borough?
Representative Tuck, through the chair, this is Marty Parsons. Willow is within the boundaries of the Mat-Su borough, so the land surrounding the community of Willow would have been conveyed to the borough as part of their selection.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And again, there's the boundaries of the city boundaries within the Mat-Su borough. They're just not incorporated, and probably for whatever reason, I don't know what it is with this particular parcel, but I'm sure if the community had the opportunity to try and get these, that they would. So here we are. It's time to keep moving on here, and I think we've got plenty of discussion. Is there any further questions? So I'm trying to follow back here. I think we had a friendly amendment by Representative Tuck, that the conceptual amendment to conceptual amendment number 4, that the Frying Pan Lake, if that property was not selected by the community of Willow as they're trying to go through and plan their community out and selected by the community, that it would revert back for conveyance to the university if they didn't do that within 10 years. I believe that's where we're at, Representative.
Yes, that's correct.
And then we had an objection by Representative Kawasaki. Representative Kawasaki, do you maintain your objection?
Yes.
Objection maintained. Clerk, call the roll. And then a yes vote is supports a, amended amendment number 4. A no vote rejects amended amendment number 4. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Guttenberg.
No.
Representative Kawasaki.
No.
Representative Tuck.
Yes.
Representative P. Wilson.
No.
Representative Seaton. Representative Olson. Co-chair Newman.
Yes.
Co-chair Johnson.
Yes.
Three yeas, three nays.
It is.
Hold on. Representative Wilson thought we were on the amendment to the amendment.
We are.
Okay, the amendment to the amendment was to, to accept, Representative?
Yeah.
Excuse me, I was mistaken. can we void that? And then let's do that again for clarification. And it's the amendment to the amendment to accept Representative Tuck's amendment to my amendment. Excuse me.
Can we restate that, Mr. Chairman, the whole amendment?
So again, a yes vote is to accept Representative Tuck's amendment.
Mr. Chairman, you can't just nullify it. I would vote that we rescind our action adopting amendment number 3.
There we go. Thank you, Co-Chair. Getting to be long days.
That's not amendment number 3.
Ask for objection.
Is there an objection to rescinding that action?
That's amendment number 4.
Amendment number 4.
You missed it all.
Patties.
On the conceptual amendment to amendment 4.
So we still have amendments?
Yes. Okay.
So
we just weren't clear on.
We rescind our. Okay, let's go back on the record.
Okay, so we're going to go back. We're going to rescind that last vote, and then we'll clearly state it. Okay, we're back in order. Representative Johnson?
I would move that we rescind our action on adopting amendment number 1 to amendment, conceptual amendment number 1 to amendment number 4.
Yes. Is there any objection to that? Hearing and seeing none. So carried. We have rescinded our action on that vote, and so now we will try and restate this again appropriately to where we have Representative Tuck offered an amendment to amendment number 4, which is offered by Representative Newman. That amendment states that if the community of Willow does not petition the state or whatever verbiage we use, or does not request conveyance of the Frying Pan Lake property into the community of Willow, if they move ahead trying to incorporate into a city, that within 10 years that it would revert back into this legislation for the university. Is there objections to that amendment?
Mr. Chairman,
Johnson.
Thank you. I think someone has, we've rescinded Representative Tuck's amendment. So if he doesn't make a new amendment, we're back on the original amendment.
Right.
Excuse me. We rescinded the vote.
Yeah.
We rescinded the vote.
We rescinded our action on the vote. That's correct.
So we're
that's
back correct. Now to the amendment.
Right.
His amendment.
We're back to Representative Tuck's amendment to Representative Newman's amendment. Is there an objection to the amendment to the amendment?
Yes.
Yes.
Could I have the amendment restated?
Okay. The amendment to amendment number 4 was that if the community of Willow does not request conveyance of the Frying Pan Lake area into the adoption of their city within 10 years of, I guess we better look at the date.
That's the original amendment. The amendment was to change from to 10 years?
That if they do not select that within 10 years, that this property would stay in the university's hands. So if the community doesn't apply to request this land within 10 years, Frying Pan Lake area into their community within 10 years, it stays in the university's possession. Is So, and there was an objection to that. There was an objection by Kawasaki. And so then a yes vote is to amend Amendment Number 4, adopting Representative Tuck's amendment. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Representative Tuck?
Yes.
Representative P. Wilson?
No.
Representative Olson? Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Edgman? Co-Chair Newman?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
Yes, we have a tie, so that didn't work.
That's a fail.
4-3.
Still fails.
Oh, it was 4-3.
Still fails. I read it wrong.
4-3 amendment, the amendment failed. Go back to the original amendment, which just Representative Newman's amendment to remove the Frying Pan Lake area from this legislation. And then a yes vote would remove Frying Pan Lake. Clerk, call the roll. Or is there an objection?
There's still an objection. Yeah.
Conceptual amendment.
That was Kawasaki, Representative Kawasaki. Representative Tuck?
No.
Representative P. Wilson?
Yes.
Representative Seaton?
No.
Representative Guttenberg?
No.
Co-Chair Newman?
Yes.
Co-Chair Johnson?
Yes.
Representative Kawasaki?
No.
Three yeas, four nays.
Conceptual amendment number 4 fails. Any other amendments? Okay, we do have some discussion from Leg's Legal on this one, too. And before we get to that, sorry, Don. Is there members in the audience on public testimony on this at the time? If you'd like to come forward here quickly, we'll make sure we get your voices are heard. Go ahead, name and
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to express my opinion here, and I appreciate your amazing abilities to follow everything you've been following. It was remarkable.
Mr. Name, are you Kevin Hood?
I am Kevin Hood. I am a Juneau resident. Actually, if I can, I'm going to. I live at 26. Can you hear me okay? Yeah. I live at 2630 Fritz Cove Road here in Juneau. And I'm testifying on behalf of myself and also my fiance and our 15-month-old son. I'd like to talk about the Sumdum parcel in this lands bill. And I'd like to ask that it's a 5-acre parcel. It's in the Endicott Arm area. It's 50 miles south of Juneau, approximately. It'd be... I know there's been some discussion in other committees about this parcel, and I'd just like to ask that my request would be that it be removed from this bill entirely. And the reason for that, I thought it was really interesting that the representative from DNR mentioned that they try to avoid prime recreation areas, and I would say that this qualifies as one. It's a state inholding that's entirely surrounded by a designated wilderness. I've gone down there, and my fiance have gone down there quite a few times. We go there, it's sort of a regular summer trip we take. We go down there to appreciate the wildlife, to camp. We also collect berries, things like that there, and it's just a real special spot. I think that it's also a unique spot in that when you're heading south out of Juneau, you've got power lines and lodges, things up Taku Inlet in Taku Harbor. You've got the old cannery and docks. You get Limestone Inlet with the power lines and the balls, things going across. In Snettisham, you have a hatchery and the power plant and the lines up in there. And so when you get down to the Tracy Arm, Endicott Arm, Holcomb area, this is the first place from Juneau that has no development in it. And so it's kind of a unique opportunity for Alaskans. It's also the only wilderness between Skagway and down here. Well, there's nothing north of Skagway, but going all the way from Skagway all the way down to the Stikine-Laconi Wilderness in Petersburg. And it's a special place. It's used by, I know there's big game hunters who use that area. It's a special cove. And they go there to sight in their rifles. They go there to take their clients for a walk. It's a protected anchorage, which is kind of rare in that vicinity. It's Endicott Arm is a fjord, has got pretty sheer walls, and it's got a lot of fetch in it. And so it's a special place in that you can tuck in there. I don't think it's like a what I'd call an intractable solution, like DNR should just have to sit on that land in perpetuity. I would say that because it's surrounded by a designated wilderness, that it could be maybe traded to the Forest Service for lands near closer to Juneau, which I think would have higher value and also be more appropriate for development, such that we don't basically extend development into every bay all the way south of Juneau. It's just a real special spot, and I think the fact that the Forest Service recognized that the Tracy Arm, Ford's Terror, that whole vicinity, they recognized like a scenic area or something like that in the 70s, and then it was designated, there was the Tracy Arm, Ford's Terror Wilderness designated in 1980, and then again 1990, the Chuck River Wilderness, which actually included the lands all around this parcel, was designated. I think it indicates that this area has a lot of value to a lot of different people. And so I thought Representative Kawasaki was asking questions about, you know, is it worth putting a lot of restrictive covenants or just withdrawing the land in its entirety? And rather than just say, you know, we shouldn't, I mean, I guess if you really want to keep it in there, I'd ask that a restrictive covenant be added that would disallow any development to keep the area in its wild state. But it seemed like it just make more sense to exclude just these 5 acres from this bill, and that's my request to you.
Kevin, who's your state representatives?
My state representative would be Kathy Munoz.
And Senator Egan. Senator Egan. Yeah. Okay. I think Senator Egan will probably get a chance at this one over in Senate Finance. Okay. I don't know if there's a companion bill over there or not. But I would certainly suggest you make your request through your representatives.
Thanks.
Representative Munoz and
I will do that.
Senator Egan there, and they're familiar with your areas and can talk to them pretty well, I'm sure. Representative Kosaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know when this was put in or if this was put in Community Regional Affairs, but it looks like that was one of the ones where they added covenants to it.
There were covenants added to it that restrict mining and timber, but in my opinion, it's a 5 acre. That's not the value or the threat to that area. That's not where, in my opinion, it those don't go far enough, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. Any other questions for Kevin? Thank you, Kevin.
I appreciate the time. Thanks.
You bet. For hanging out, Mary? How'd I know it was you? Because I know everybody else in the audience, isn't it? Go ahead, Mary. Please state your name and who you represent.
Thank you very much. My name is Mary Irvin, and I live at 326 6th Street here in Juneau, Alaska. My phone number is 586-1480, and I'm here testifying on behalf of myself. And it's nice to see you again, Representative Wilson and Representative Cedar. We met each other in House Ed earlier over this very same bill. And I'm sorry, some of this will be a repeat, but I wanted to give people a view of the area that I'm concerned about. I would like to start out by being very clear. I am a very strong supporter of the University of Alaska. Although I personally received both my undergraduate and graduate degrees outside at private institutions, I have taken many rigorous classes at the University of Alaska Southeast, several fun classes at the University of Alaska Southeast as well, and I have also served the university for several years as an instructor on a volunteer basis for ED 593, which is a continuing education course. I truly wish that our university system had more financial stability and support in many ways. I find it regrettable that our university professors, especially adjunct professors, are woefully underpaid. However, this evening I am here to respectfully ask for your help in regards to a very tiny parcel of land included in this bill. It's the 5-acre parcel known as Sumdum. The 5-acre parcel known as Sumdum is a parcel of land about 40 miles south of Juneau. Actually, Kevin's probably more right on about the distance. But anyway, from where we are today, it's about 40 to 50 miles south. It is a waterfront piece of property, and it is abutted on either side by the mouth of two very productive salmon streams. It is the it was a seasonal fish camp that was important to the Sumdum clan of the Tlingit people. And it is a significant historic site important to many Alaska history scholars as well. The parcel is located about 4 miles distant from where the traditional Tsaundon people lived in at least six large clan houses down there. The clan houses have been documented, not photographed, but documented by the late Andy Hope, and they were the Black Bear House, the Glacier House, and others, the people of which drew fish from all these streams season after season. But I do want to emphasize that their village was not on this site. Their village was about 4 miles distant. the parcel known as Sumdum, however, is the direct site of the old 1879 to about 1903 town site of Sumdum. In my research, I've come across many things: Interior Board of Land Appeals cases revealing the special nature of this area, a PhD thesis documenting some of the cultural exchange that makes this area such an interesting one historically and culturally for historians like me to study. And although it was used for years by Tlingit people, the people it translates as the people of the sparkling green water. Their name for themselves, the Tsaundon people, as a fish camp. Later in history, this particular parcel, during the early gold mining days, was one of the very first towns in Alaska, in American Alaska, in the wilds north of Wrangell, and in a place not frequented by the Russian America Company. The town consisted of several hundred souls, some Tlingits, some out of the area Tlingits, who came for work in the new economy, and also new gold miner immigrants to Alaska as well. They all used the very beach at Sumdum that we're talking about to pull up their boats and their barges, and later they erected a dock, a large dock, and a staging area there. Cabins went up, a very large bunkhouse for the miners went up, a laundry, a cookhouse, and American Alaska's first brewery to serve the booming area. A corduroy road and a horse ore cart tram system was put in place, and dozens of miles of tunnels to blast out the hard rock gold out of the earth penetrated deep into the surrounding hills, and they are still there today. Three Tlingit Indians from Wrangell paddled through a storm that they never should have logically survived to bring the Presbyterian missionary Samuel Hall Young and his traveling buddy John Muir to this very beach in a large dugout canoe in October of 1879. Another time, officers with the U.S. Coast and Geodetic Survey stopped here in the 1890s. The United States Navy stopped here several times. We know this from ships' logs and officers' personal diaries, and throughout the years of its heyday, there was a United States post office at Sumdum, just upland of the wharves. It may interest you to know that the State Historical Library has several photographic collections showing the town of Sumdum. I myself possess a letter with a Sumdum stamp cancellation for a package that was mailed at Sutter Creek, California, to Sumdum, and received there at Sumdum. The Alaska State Museum holds several items collected at Sumdum, one of which is a really unique firearm, a rifle used experimentally by the United States Navy in the early 1800s, and that was also collected at Sumdum. There are historical accounts of early botanists collecting 9 to 4 undiscovered plants at Sumdum. The Trowbridge collection of letters is on file at the State Historical Library. One of Alaska's great mining historians, Earl Redman, culled items from early Alaskan newspapers and wrote some pretty compelling stuff about the labor disputes during the early corporate mining era at the town of Sumdum. They ranged from pretty ridiculous things, such as a cookie who worked in the cookhouse down there refusing to serve the rotten eggs that he was supplied by the corporation, and 40 miners siding with him, and the corporation saying, "You don't like our eggs, you walk," and they walked. So it ranges from these kind of interesting little vignettes to deeper and perhaps more meaningful actions reflected in Alaska history, such as the early governor, Governor Shakely, stepping in to mediate civil unrest and disputes at Sumdum. He intervened in the goings-on down there in a historic act of cross-cultural fact-finding and discerning the rights of land users there at Sumdum. Members of the committee, how do we value this kind of thing? How do we value public history of a diversity of people? The Tlingits and the later Alaskans alike interacting together, getting used to each other, experiencing each other, and learning to live and work together in a certain place, in a certain time, in those daily lives, which started to formulate the formative beginnings for a great and diverse state, which we have now. Can we value this? Should we value this? I'm here tonight to respectfully request that you strengthen the amendment begun one short week ago by Juneau Representative Kathy Munoz and House Community and Regional Affairs Co-Chair Bob Herron, Representative Bob Herron, regarding Sumdum. In particular, I would ask that you consider adding two small but meaningful words that would pertain just to these 4.9 acres at Sumdum. So on page 10 of the bill before you, section R1.
What line is that?
It is line 6 in the committee substitute, I believe. Yeah. Is it? Yeah.
It's
page 10, line 6.
Page 10, line 6, Mary.
So on page 10, line 6, section R1, which currently reads, may not be open to commercial timber harvest or mineral development. I request that you insert the words may not be open to development, including commercial timber harvest or mineral development. This addition would strengthen the amendment already achieved and passed out of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee. I believe that if that committee had been able to work on this amendment further, this is exactly what they would have done. This change would also technically and legally squarely fulfill the letter and the spirit of the Central Southeast Area Plan, which outlines the state's longstanding management intent for the parcel known as Sumdum. The Central Southeast Plan was the result of intense public process with adequate notice and comment and intense public input. It was formally adopted by the state in November 2000, and it should be considered the controlling document that this committee and this legislature looks to, not the lands list that you've been provided as a result of the earlier lands bill. There are many errors in what you've been provided, and I ask that you turn to the Central Southeast Plan. If you were able to do that, I don't have a copy of either one with me, but if you were able to do that, you would find that in the existing Central Southeast Area Plan, Sumdum is designated RU, Recreation Undeveloped. RU is the most restrictive category for lands. Lands designated as such cannot be, quote, sold to an individual, and that the University Lands Office either constitutes an individual under this language or they would intend potentially to sell it to individuals. So, in summary, I guess I would just like to say that there is significant Alaskan history attached to this 4.9-acre parcel of land. That history is not tiny or small or frail, nor is it mine alone. It doesn't and shouldn't belong to one Alaskan or one company or one corporation. The history of the place is Alaskan. It is robust, and it is just this particular and this very much land-based sort of state history that we should learn about and learn from. It is history that we can choose to ignore in which case it will be worse than lost to history, as people say, lost to history. Or it is history that we can choose to discover and value and, yes, protect, and in turn offer to our children and our children's children, or to the visitors to our state on boat tours of the area, hiking adventures on the land, or otherwise. Thank you very much for listening to my somewhat lengthy testimony, and I'll try to answer any questions you may have.
Thanks, Mary. Any questions for Mary? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the area of Sumdum there has a lot of historical value, and so is it the university's intention, if they're able to acquire the land, to strictly use it for research, and would not, and is it your intent not to see any development happen in the area, including maybe another town or another city? You'd rather keep it as a historical park for research, or what exactly would you like? I'm sorry.
Right. Through the chair, Representative Tuck, my interest is to see that land preserved. It is, as Kevin mentioned, surrounded by the federal Tracy Arm Ford's Terror Wilderness Area, which is 730,000 acres surrounding this. And then there's this little 4.9 acre parcel. I am sorry, but I can't even envision more than a lodge or a dock placed on that property. I don't envision, you know, that area blooming into a little town that could make money. It's outside of the city limits of Juneau. So it's out there. I am interested in seeing it remain public. I have a little bit of heartburn with plans that the university has gone ahead with since 2005. I think they've been making having meetings with potential buyers, and I'm not sure that that's in the best interest of the public.
Thank you, Mary. Any other questions for Mary? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you look at line 8 on that same page, it must be preserved for the purpose of historical, cultural, and scientific research and education, and must be accessible to public interpretive study and education. Doesn't that do what you're asking it to do?
Through yourself, the co-chair. Representative Johnson, when I read something like Section 2 there, my mind drifts off. This seems like really pretty general language, and it fits what I'm talking about, but it's so nonspecific that even somebody as non-creative as me could envision, say, a Mount Roberts tramway or a zip line ending right here, or a dock with full access to the public. So I am interested in seeing it receive a more restrictive covenant to protect that land.
Read the next section.
I've got no more questions.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you. Could we get Wendy Redden to come up and testify in the Parks and Rec? Or
okay.
Is there anybody else to testify?
Yeah, there's four more.
Oh, there's four more? Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman.
Here's where I think where we're going on this. There's four people have been waiting online to testify. So let's allow them, the public, to go ahead and testify. We've got some issues that Mr. Bullock has raised this evening that we've got to.
Well, these additional pages are online as well.
And the ones that are highlighted are online.
They're all online.
So we've got okay, we've got several pages of people online. And then we've got some legal concerns by Mr. Bullock. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're not going to be able to get this moved out tonight anyhow. Let's talk to these people from online, hear their concerns. Mr. Bullock, would you like to address us while we're here? Because Ledge Legal is awfully busy, too, and trying to get their stuff done. I can see some amendments coming, some good discussions by Mary. Go ahead, Don.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name's Don Bullock. I'm one of your attorneys in Legislative Legal Services. I'm not going to talk about the things, the constitutional issues. I'll talk about that later, and I'll continue to wait through the rest of the testimony. But I thought it might be helpful to those that are waiting to testify as to the structure of the bill. And so they, if you look at it right now, it's basically three parts. There's the part one, which is the conveyance of the land to the university in AS 1440-365A, which is in section 5 of the bill. And then later on, you have sections N on page 8, subsection N, that takes land out of those parcels out of the list that's in A. So those take it out and reserves for another day as to what to do with that land. That land continues to be in the custody of Department of Natural Resources. So you have the land list, you have one part that takes parcels out, and then you have actually four things: the conditional delays in which land is conveyed to the university but not yet to allow others to lay claim to those newly formed municipalities. So that's conditionally transferred land. It's going to go unless the municipalities take it on. And then the final condition is the sum-dum situation where the land will continue to go to the university, but it's going to be subject to certain limitations and covenants. So the people online that are testifying may want to direct as to whether they want the land to not be transferred, to be taken out of the list, whether they want to have it delayed for some reason. Generally, in the provision of the bill, it's for municipal land selections. Or they want the land to continue to be transferred but subject to certain conditions, as the sum-dum property was. So I hope that gives some help and guidance to...
And it did. Thank you. Thank you on that, Don. And we've got a handout from you of an email that we received from you this evening on some of your concerns that we'll get to the committee members. The staff's working on getting that done, prepared now. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. While you're here, Don, you had a recommendation on a potentially conforming amendment where we changed from 2012 to 2014. Then it was also narrowed a limit down from 4 years to 2 years. And your recommendation, I think it's on page 9, line 29, that we change that and make a conforming amendment to make that 2018. Unless it is our intention to keep that as a two-year window instead of four.
Yeah, through the chair, as a drafter, conceptual amendments are often challenging. And often, as you know, end up with phone calls to say, well, you extended the date. There were two different dates, 2012, 2016. 2016, you extended the 2012 to 2014. Do you intend to also extend the 2016 date to 2018? And the reason I raised the question is that 2016 is still past 2014, so it's conceivable that within that two-year period the land selection could be made. But whether or not it was the intent of the committee to extend that date to 2018, you should clarify.
So, and that is just a clarifying amendment, Mr. Chairman. If we wanted to extend it, if not, just search for discussion. It just narrows the window from 4 to 2 years. And is that something we want to take on at this time, or we?
I just do not take on the amendment this time. But if you've got a handle on that, Representative Johnson,
make that assumption.
I'll let you control that one there. You seem to,
Mr. Chairman, have a handle on that. I will stand by while the other people have an opportunity to testify.
Okay, thanks, Don. And then again, I believe we've each got copies here of some issues that were raised from Don. And if you got questions with Don on that too, and then. We have talked to Speaker Chenault and his staff, too. I think that some of these issues, because they have constitutional issues, that this bill is going to receive a judiciary assignment to go over and talk about the legal issues. But because it's in front of us now, this committee members need to be aware of what we're doing and what's going on here. and concerns and with what Mr. Bullock has raised, and certainly allow you to ask questions to him on that process. Don?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know how many of the committee members know the questions that I've raised.
They do now. They got copies of it. You want to go through that quickly?
No, I think at this point in the evening, it might be better to just kind of identify the issues. I don't know how much it, because there should be more discussion on these issues.
There should be.
Let me talk about a second legal issue before I get to the first one. And the second one has to do with the contributions to the permanent fund. And that's in section toward the end of the bill. It's in section 13, starting on page 14 and continuing on to 15.
Yeah.
It provides for a certain amount of money that's generated from mineral lease rentals, royalties, royalty sale proceeds, net profit shares, and so forth to go into the permanent fund. And as you probably are aware, the Article 9, Section 15 requires a minimum of 25% of these type of monies to go into the permanent fund. And what this section does, in paragraph 1, it provided for the minimum amount to go into the permanent fund. And the last sentence says that it's, or the last part of it says that it's from state mineral leases issued on or before December 1st, 1979, and 25% of all bonuses by the state for mineral leases issued on or before February 15th, 1980, rather. So this paragraph is limited in time. The second paragraph provides for 50% of those monies to go into the permanent fund, which was the 25% required by the Constitution, plus an additional 25% the legislature chose to appropriate to it.
Okay, and then again, we're going to have you come back, Don, to kind of further explain this a little bit for committee members. If they have questions, then they've had a chance to kind of chew on a little bit of the issues now that you were able to discuss them. I want to make sure that we get to the people who are waiting online to testify to and address those. And again, I got a note here. Yes, we're going to have to ask Mr. We're going to ask Mr. Bullock to come back again for that. So just doing his job. He gets paid the same.
Carlos, how many hours?
Did we have any questions at this moment? I think we've got this handout from Don, and we can look at that. And then again, I think I'd suggest that people look at page 15 there, the top half of the page there, and how it does with royalties and the permanent fund dividend and some of the arguments. Thanks, Don. Have a good evening.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Seaton.
Could I just ask on that page 15, your interpretation of that? Land sales or land leases, are those aren't going to be, unless they're mineral lease rentals or royalties or net profits derived from lands, net profit shares. Can you tell me, doesn't seem like it's talking about the land, or if the university sells lands, that 25% of that land proceeds.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, when the state received land from federal government, it was subject to the condition that the state could lease its mineral interest, but couldn't dispose of them. In other words, you couldn't transfer mineral interest ownership. And it's possible to transfer land to the university, which can hold title to land. And as an entity of the state, they can have the mineral rights with it. And this section at the top of page 15 talks about mineral income. So, for example, if the Nenana gas fields prove to be productive, then the mineral income from that would be subject to being added to the permanent fund. There is a distinction, though, or this raises an issue. Since university land is state land, can some state land be only subject to 25% and other state land subject to 50% as a treating of the land differently.
Okay. And Don, you're coming back.
Right now, my recommendation on this section is, rather than have it apply to these old leases, and you want to have some amount to go to the university, consider of either adding it to paragraph 2 or not saying anything because it is mineral income from state land.
And I'll continue to work with Don. If he's got suggestions on how he could maybe fix some of these, he'll get them to me and we'll get them to the committee here before we get back in on this one again. Thanks, Don. Let's try and get to some of this public comment and get that done while these people have been patiently waiting online. I'm just going to start at the top. Tim Leiden.
Hi, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir, Tim. And folks, if we could keep this to like 2 minutes, I know we'd all appreciate it.
I appreciate your request for 2 minutes. I'll do the best I can.
And if you've got it written, just send it into the myself or Representative Johnson. We'll get it distributed.
Okay. So it's Tim Leiden and Barbara Leiden, residents of Juneau. Speaking as residents of Juneau, but we're also representing tonight 18 different commercial tour operators in Southeast Alaska. It's going to be challenging for me to compress the testimony of these 18 different individuals and their companies into 2 minutes, so I just respectfully ask for just a little patience while I try to convey the sentiments here. The 18 companies I'm speaking for, to save time, I won't list them, but I will tell you that they include Southeast Alaskan businesses such as Sound Sailing out of Sitka, Spirit Walker Expeditions out of Gustavus and Sitka, Alaska Sea Adventures out of Petersburg, and Above and Beyond Alaska out of Juneau, and others. And this list also includes some pretty big tour operators like American Safari Tours and The Boat Company, who operate multiple vessels in northern Southeast Alaska. I'll also tell you that we've testified in front of the other committees related to this bill and specifically related to the Sumdum parcel, and this list is growing. It was only 17 the last time we testified. It's now up to 18, and so I'm just trying to highlight that there are a lot of people that I represent today that are very concerned about the Sumdum parcel, and frustration is growing among the group because they feel that we have been communicating to the other committees, but our interests have not been met. I will try to summarize very quickly the issue that two other speakers about Sumdum have addressed. Basically, the 4.9-acre Sumdum parcel sits squarely in the middle of 730,000 acres of federally designated wilderness. Those values have been communicated by other speakers, so I won't go into that. But it is important to note that this is the only undeveloped mainland bay between Juneau and Frederick Sound. Someone mentioned power companies, cabins, and other things. This is a very unique place, and that's why it has this federal designation. It's valuable to residents like my wife, Barbara, and I, who, like other Juneau residents, go to this area to sightsee, fish, hunt, kayak, camp, and a variety of other things because it's an undeveloped bay. It's a very important place. But this place is also valuable to the 18 different companies that I represent tonight. And these companies do a variety of activities here, including guided hunting, fishing, walks ashore, sightseeing, kayaking, camping, and other activities. As someone else mentioned, this Sanford Cove or the Sumdum parcel is located as a safe anchorage for these 18 different companies that operate different boats here, and Endicott Arm and Tracy Arm have virtually no anchorages. And so this parcel, the Sumdum parcel in Sanford Cove, has a very high value as a safe anchorage in the nasty weather we get in Southeast Alaska. Why care? Well, obviously there's important cultural values that Mary's gone over, aesthetic values. Obviously, it should be noted that with 730,000 acres surrounding it, designated as wilderness, there's a compatibility issue, and Mary already went over how that relates to DNR's, I'm using the wrong term, but zoning. In any event, my point is that 5 acres has been and should continue to be in the future compatible with this enormous amount of undeveloped land that surrounds it. But also, there's an issue of economics here, which I'll try to explain very quickly. The 18 companies I represent tonight include small and mid-sized tour companies, hunting operations, kayaking operations, and others. Research by the University of Alaska has demonstrated that the small and mid-sized companies, their sector of Alaska's nature-based tourism industry is incredibly valuable. It pumps tens of millions of dollars into the Southeast Alaskan economy every year, and it's so important because the clients that come to these companies, they have to spend the nights before and after their tours in hotels in Southeast Alaska. So that makes them unique from the larger cruise ship industry, which I'm not putting down. I'm only emphasizing the uniqueness of this industry. Also, these 18 companies probably represent, off the top of my head, 21 or 22 different vessels that provision in Southeast Alaska every summer. That means that every load of fuel, every beer bottle, every napkin, every week's worth of food is all shopped in Southeast Alaska. And that's how these tens of millions of dollars enter the Southeast Alaskan economy. So these companies, the backbone of their industry is nature-based tourism. It's bringing people to the Alaska that they see on television and on the internet, which is the undeveloped bays. Already we have discussed that this is a unique undeveloped place in the northern Southeast Alaska mainland.
Say, Tim?
Yes.
I think we get the gist of where you're going on that. And
okay, so I'll just breeze through the economics. Can I just propose a solution?
Please, briefly.
Okay, I appreciate your patience. Basically, the preference of the 18 companies I represent is to remove the Sumdum parcel from the bill. However, we know that there is pressure to keep the Sumdum parcel in the bill, so then we would be amenable to a covenant. However, the covenant that is in there now is inadequate, and I hope to address the question that one of the representatives asked of Mary Irvin just a bit ago. But the covenant addresses mining and logging, which are not issues on that land.
Tim?
Yes.
If you could just get that into writing to us, this bill's not going to move tonight, and then we can consider that. And I believe that some of the committee members here have already may actually be considering an amendment that may remove this parcel altogether already. So
I truly appreciate your patience, and if I could just have 70 more seconds.
Tim, we've got like 15, 20 more people.
I've been on the phone for about 3 hours listening, and I sure would appreciate just being able to finish the solutions recommendation.
Go ahead, and then, please, with respect to everybody else who's listening, too, and you're going to get it to us in writing anyhow. So go ahead, Tim.
I understand, and thank you. And basically, the threat to the area is not mining or lining or mining or logging. It's all about someone building a small lodge there and having flight seeing tours or catamaran tours, other tours, and all that can be done under the current language that describes preserving the area for education, native the cultural values, historical values, that kind of thing. So an amendment that reads no development would be important to the 18 companies I represent and Juneau residents such as myself, and I appreciate the patience of the committee and everyone in the room. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Mike Fay. Mike, are you still available? Okay, Loretta King? Roberta Charles? Joyce?
Hello?
Sorry. Oh, Roberta. Are you there, Roberta?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Roberta.
I'm calling because I'm concerned about Bjorka Island. I'm Roberta Charles. I'm Kaguantan from Sitka. Was born in the village 73 years ago and was raised to hear about Bjorka Island as part of the family usage and accustomed places to go to. The family has is asking for a reinstatement. We have a reinstatement application for the 115 acres which Rudolph Walton applied for as a native allotment. He didn't get it. But the basis of the reinstatement is that Rudolph was not provided a hearing to provide evidence of use and occupancy for the additional acreage that was originally denied. And the family's concerned that and want the Burica Island to be excluded from the university lands bill.
Thank you, Roberta. And could you get, could you send us something, an email, or get that to writing for us? We've got it, if we don't already have it.
Yeah, I think several members of the family want to do that. We just are really concerned that this is a family matter and something that goes back. Well, like I said, I'm 73, and it goes back, the land goes back to my grandfather's time.
Thank you, Roberta.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Wilson has a question for you, Roberta.
Roberta, I guess my question is, so is there a question of whose land it is and that it's not state land? I mean, what are you saying here?
The Bureau of Land Management is handling this. There was a hearing a few years ago by Sitka Tribes in which my mother attended, requesting the land back into the hands of the family.
So what was the outcome?
Congressmen were there. It's still in process.
And, Roberta, can you get your contact information to Representative Wilson, and maybe she can discuss that a little bit further in depth with you or her staff? Sounds like you're interested in that.
I would like to go on, but for one thing, I'm recovering from back surgery, and it's been really difficult for me to stay online this long.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Roberta. You're doing good.
Okay. Thank you.
Joyce Shales, not here. Steve Henrickson?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, Steve.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Steve Henrickson. I reside in Juneau, and I'd like to add a few more things about Bjork Island. Rudolph Walton was born on Bjork Island in 1867. He was one of Sheldon Jackson's first Tlingit students at the Sitka Industrial School, and at that time, after he graduated, Alaska Natives were not allowed to hold legal title to any property except through the homestead or native allotment process. Rudolph Walton applied for about 140 acres, something like that, but he was given only 40 acres. And then during World War II, those 40 acres were taken from him by the U.S. government due to the military emergency, with the stipulation that after the war, the land would be returned. And it was, and it was then turned over to several other federal agencies. And the family has been fighting for this land for decades. And several of the family members have passed away during this time. And this matter came up in 2005 when the university lands bill was being talked about at that time. It was pointed out by the family and the Sitka tribe that this is a matter that's being dealt with by the federal government, and there's still not a resolution. And yet this property remained in the university lands bill. We understand through the Sitka tribe that this is being actively dealt with by the BLM, and we would like Bjork Island to be removed from the university lands bill.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And we've got quite a few people here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, eight or nine of them from the Walton family for Bjork Island, from Sitka, here all waiting to testify. And Representative Wilson has asked that maybe if you contacted her office, she'd be willing to work with you on what the issue is here. So she's trying to get a better explanation on this and what's going on there. So if you still need to testify to the committee tonight on this one, we'll take you. If not, you can go ahead and work through Representative Wilson's office and try and come up through a solution. But I guess we'll go through the roll call here first and ask if you still want
to. Can I talk to him?
Okay, Representative Wilson has a message for you.
Yeah, I tell you what, we're not moving the bill tonight. And I know I'm just kind of saying this so everybody doesn't have to wait in line so long, because it's been so long already and it's getting pretty late. And what what I'm asking you to do is to get in contact with my office so that we know exactly what we're dealing with. And I'm sure the university doesn't want something that's been in litigation for all these years anyway. And we'll see what we can do. But I kind of feel like just dumping it on me like this real quick right now is a little bit, I think I need to, we need to get this corralled in the office kind of and try to get it worked out so that we know exactly what we're dealing with. So can you, would that be okay?
Okay, so.
Have at least one person read into the record, though, since we've been waiting
please,
so long.
Please go ahead. Who are we speaking to?
Who would like to go? Okay.
I'm assuming that we're all together in Sitka then.
Can we have each person give their names, and then I'd like to read a short statement?
Sure. Sure.
Okay. Irene Vaden.
Joe Patterson.
Charlie Daniels.
Elizabeth Goldsberry. I'm a great granddaughter of Rudolph Walton, who had the native allotment on Bjork Island.
Cheryl M. Lowe.
William Craig.
Jeremiah Craig.
And I'm Dr. Mary Ann Novitsky. I am a granddaughter of Rudolph Walton. Rudolph Walton was a Tlingit Indian born on Bjork Island in 1867. Bjork Island was his summer home and fish camp through his whole life. Mr. Walton had applied and received Bjork Island as part of his native allotment. The federal government established the Native Allotment Act of 1906 to return land to Alaska Natives. The federal government issued Rudolph Walton a certificate of ownership for the Native Allotment on Bjork Island. During World War II, the United States government requested Bjork Island to help protect this country, and Rudolph Walton's property was then used in the war effort. It was not returned to him or his heirs, as was expected, when it was no longer needed to protect the country. He was a responsible citizen and a patriot, and always supported this country and believed his rights would be honored and protected. The heirs of Rudolph Walton and the Sitka Tribe of Alaska have worked very hard to have this property returned to his family. Federal agencies, including the Department of Defense, United States Coast Guard, United States Forest Service, have all supported this effort. The heirs and the Sitka Tribe of Alaska are continuing to work to correct this injustice and to have the Bjork Island Native Allotment returned to Rudolph Walton heirs, and respectfully request that Bjork Island not be included in the University of Alaska Land Grant List 2005, which is currently part of House Bill 295. Please amend this bill and remove Bjork Island. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary Ann. And Representative Wilson has a question for you.
Mary Ann, I'm just trying to kind of figure out in my head where this is at. Is this anywhere close to where the Fort Russo area is?
I'm sorry, I don't know that.
It's further out in the Pacific Ocean.
Okay.
Than Fort Russo.
Okay, maybe on that one it might be good if it gets removed and then they can try and get it resubmitted to the family. I think we got two steps there. Thanks for all you folks in Sitka for waiting on here. I know Representative Wilson's been eager to talk to you about this issue, and I know that she will work with you and her staff diligently to make sure that your voices are heard.
Yeah, we'll get it taken care of.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, folks. Leo Luxick from the City of Petersburg.
Yes, hello. This is Leo Luzak. I'm the Community Development Director here in Petersburg.
Yes, Leo.
I'd like to let you know that the City of Petersburg Council passed Resolution 1921.
Any more things
to submit? Monday night. I don't know if you can hear me. We're getting some feedback. Hello?
Okay, we're kind of got Sitka on there, I think, at the same time. Okay, go ahead, Leo.
Our council passed a resolution requesting an extension of the moratorium on the selection of university land within the boundaries of the proposed Petersburg Borough. And I thank you for discussing that tonight, and I thank you for the two-year extension. However, the borough process is very involved, and 2 years is appreciated, but I'm afraid it might just be unrealistic. We're going to have to redo our borough petition, hire attorneys, do an extensive outreach program to the 10% of our population that now resides in the unorganized borough. We don't have much to offer them except a place in our government and a fair share of taxation. But one of the few carrots we do have is that the borough will be able to select some unencumbered lands outside the borough. And I figure that estimate 95% of the land outside the borough is owned by the federal government in the Tonga, so that's not available. The land that was available was selected by many state agencies, including prior selections by the University of Alaska. What was left of that was taken up when the Mental Health Trust was reconstituted. That took up about all of our available land. In fact, these five parcels we're requesting, I think, are the only available state land left within our proposed borough that we could possibly select from. I would like to propose that you give us the five-year extension. The state wants all of our areas to form into boroughs, and we would like to fulfill that desire. It's just to do it within 2 years and an extensive outreach program that we envision. We're going to be under the gun, and if we lose the opportunities to select these parcels, there's really nothing out there for us to select that would benefit our proposed borough.
Thanks, Leo. Representative Wilson has a question for you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Leo, we added two more years to it, so instead of the deadline being 2012, it's 2014. So that gives you four more years from now.
I appreciate that, and thank you, Representative Wilson, through the chair. It's just, you know how Petersburg is. We're going to form another borough formation committee. We're going to hire an attorney. We're going to have numerous public meetings and try to come to some type of solution. But we have a very open, Scandinavian-like process of government here, and it just takes time. We really desire to form a borough, but I'm afraid we're going to bump up against this 2014 deadline before we know it, and if we lose the opportunity to possibly select from these few remaining state lands, I don't think we'll ever form a borough. That's my personal opinion.
Thanks, Leo. Thanks, Leo. And Paul, feel free to call. I won't go there.
Feel free to call.
David Kensington.
Yes, this is David Kensinger, and I'm one of the residents of the proposed Petersburg Borough. And I'm in the unique position that I'm actually volunteering myself to be taxed, which is something that doesn't happen very often. But I feel very strongly that Petersburg must form this borough. And one of the what happened in our past process is it became obvious that we were not going to be able to complete the process in time to receive the community selection lands, and hence it was really hard to motivate people outside of the boundary of the city of Petersburg to sign on to the process. As you all are probably aware, it's a very cumbersome process. Once we have decided to form the borough, sometimes you can wait as long as a year or longer from the local boundary commission to even look at the proposal and give us a reply back on whether we need to go back to the drawing board or not. So I guess what I am asking for is for more time. And I think we will form a borough. I think it's very important, and I appreciate your consideration on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any questions for Wendy? Thank you. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Dennis Rogers.
Yes, I'm. This is Dennis Rogers in Petersburg. Can you hear me?
Dennis.
Yes, good evening. House Resources Committee. I wanted to make a brief statement, offer some testimony with regards to the Sumdum Sanford Cove selection. I won't reiterate a lot of what's been said. We are one of the small business owners that Tim referred to. We do extensive trips in that area, the Sumdum area. Sanford Cove is one of the very few anchorages in that area. It's a very scenic location. That's why it's probably had the attention over history that Mary referred to. And it would be a shame to see that go into private hands for the development by a single corporation and preclude that area from the use of the Alaskans that we see using that cove over the course of the summer, the spring, summer, and fall, and even into the winter. I think it needs to be removed, and if not removed, I think special attention should be given to the covenants that Mary Irvin suggested. I think that's all I have, and appreciate the time, and appreciate your the hours that you guys have put in on this.
Thanks, Dennis. Appreciate you hanging in there and waiting for us. We certainly cannot do our job without the public input. We are the voice of the public at the state level, and we appreciate people like you are willing to put in the time and effort to do what you do. I don't believe I've got any more signed up. Is there any more either in the audience or off-net who would like to testify yet tonight? Okay, hearing and seeing none, we're not going to close public testimony yet until we see the last of this. We've got some questions here for Mr. Bullock, and we'll allow committee members to talk to them. And with that, thanks for all the effort that this committee members do. We're sitting here. We've still got, we had one excused absence here earlier, but you know, pretty much everybody that this committee has always been hanging in here, hanging in tight to well past 9:30, 10 o'clock quite regularly here. So thank you with that. Have a good evening.